Morning, everyone. Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting is now come to order. If anybody has any cell phones or any other audible devices, put them on silent. It's not to disrupt the meeting. Appreciate it. And if you'll stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, going to move along now to item number 3. This is discussion of possible action, the approval of the agenda for this date, July the 19th, 2016. Any public comment regarding today's agenda items? Hearing none, call for a motion for approval.
I'll move to approve the agenda for today, July the 19th, 2016.
I'll second that motion.
Moved and seconded to approve the agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Move along now to item number 4. This is discussion of possible action. Approval of the minutes for June the 21st, 2016. Does anyone have any public comment regarding those minutes? Hearing none, call for a motion for approval.
I'll move to approve the minutes for June 21st, 2016.
I'll second that motion.
Moved and seconded to approve the minutes for June the 21st. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now, next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. Does anyone have any public comment regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, call for a motion for approval.
Move to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll second that motion.
Moved and seconded to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. First up, item number 12 is a presentation from Edon, Mike Kuzmierski. I don't see that he's in attendance quite yet, so we'll skip over Mike, and then we'll come back to him when he shows up. So moving along now, this is item number 13. This is discussion and possible action. This is action for possible approval of Melissa Reed settlement agreement for $45,000 in consideration arising out of the employment of Ms. Reed with the Story County Sheriff's Office and authorizing the county manager to sign the agreement. Discussion on the matter may include board involvement and the settlement of cases in general. So regarding the settlement today, we can go ahead and take any public comment regarding this.
Do you want to go over it at all, the discussion?
Sure. Why don't you do a presentation first, and then we'll take public comment following the district attorney.
The general terms of this agreement, as you know, this is a proposed settlement agreement regarding Melissa Reed. There's many times a lot of indemnification clause, liability in other cases arising out of things you don't even know about yet. That's the general boilerplate. But the general terms of this particular agreement are that Melissa Reed is asking that the documents in her personnel file be purged by July 26, 2016. She's also asking that she be able to submit a letter of resignation. She also is asking for a $45,000 settlement amount, and that check be due and payable on July 20th, 2016. Pat, any additions?
I think the only thing I didn't quite catch if you said or not is this settlement was negotiated with the understanding that this would release the county and all of its officials from any and all claims.
That's correct. And that's standard language in an agreement, and I'm glad that you pointed that out, that that's the boilerplate that I was talking about. And a lot of the legalese that you see in the document is basically saying in a nutshell what Pat Whitten just told the board.
Okay. Ms. Rosberg, did you want to weigh in on this?
I don't have a lot to say. I think District Attorney Langer explained it well. There was only one other provision in there that there would be no rehire of this employee. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
I got a question for Pat or Austin.
Sure.
Say, Austin, this is like the second action we've had in the last 12 months, within the last 12 months, I believe. Do we have other pending actions?
Can you be more specific as far as?
I mean, any adverse pending reactions towards to the county? Do we have more complaints filed, basically?
To be very general, Commissioner McGuffey, I do need to make sure, like Ann had explained, as far as HR and confidentiality, I'm aware of five pending actions. Three of them may be from one person, so you can look at that however you want in that office.
Okay. I had a couple here that came up. Is it possible to, like, periodically report on employee pending actions, like maybe quarterly or something in that fashion, to kind of keep us up to speed?
Sure, I can do that. You know, in fact, what might be good is when Comptroller Gallagher comes and talks about the fiscal things that are going on in the quarter, perhaps it wouldn't be a half bad idea to have me come tail in with him and then just give you a little HR update of things that aren't confidential. Yeah. I can't talk about names and all things like that, but I can explain, you know, these are the many things that are going on in different departments or whatever. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, because we really don't hear anything of that nature from the HR department.
That'd be my pleasure.
Okay.
I'll begin that at the next quarterly.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Austin.
Okay. Thank you.
Les, do you have anything to weigh in on this?
Not at this moment.
Okay. Pat, you have anything else?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. At this time, then, we'll go ahead and open this up for public comment.
I do want to stress again, this is, annually when we renew a very large premium with Nevada Public Agency Insurance Pool, we do it for a number of reasons. This is not an insured claim, but what we do get as a result of that premium after our $5,000 deductible is met is we get what I would consider some of the best legal representation available. This is perhaps one of the best legally crafted documents as a layperson that I've ever seen. So I want to compliment Kathy Parks, who's not here, but who has previously consulted with each of you. And I want to thank our district attorney, too, for, being there as well throughout the process. It's nice to have that second opinion as you're navigating these waters. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson, you had your hand up. Would you like to come on to the podium?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Mr. County Manager, Madam District Attorney, as was mentioned, this is the second apparent major settlement of an employment decision out of the Sheriff's Department, and I think it is, first off, I'm assuming at $45,000 there must have been some high risk of a liability result in this case. And if that's true, my compliments to the district attorney for negotiating a good number, assuming it was a liability case. But I would ask the commission to consider looking into what's going on in this department and looking into it with some transparency, perhaps. Have a hearing on it. Have witnesses in. Ask questions in a public forum about just exactly what is going on in this department to create all these employee settlements. This is costing taxpayers money. I assume it's coming out of the general fund again for this $45,000, just like the $99,000 in the last settlement. And I'm trying to get some documents as far as if there's been any prior settlements out of the same department caused by the same individual. But I would suggest that it's time to look into this department as to what's going on. I know there's a thought that if it's an elected official that the county is powerless and can't do anything. I don't think that's accurate. I think the county has a lot of tools, number one, in order to investigate, to determine what is causing this. to remedy behavior. You have a lot of tools there in terms of the Ethics Commission, in terms of making things public, in terms of publicizing, at least within the county, employees, in terms of training, in terms of appropriation. You have a wide variety of tools to correct the behavior going on in this department, and I encourage you to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Anyone else like to make a public comment on this? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and
say your thought for the moment.
Go right ahead.
Share a thought for the moment. Generally on point, I think. We've been active as a board in reviewing, analyzing, and with a desire to lower the tax burdens for all the community, for all the folks that live here in the county. And it's possible that we could lower some county property taxes or some other forms of rebate. In order to accomplish something like that, we have to see a great deal of fiscal responsibility out of all departments. That's why we do our budgeting every year, and that's why we're line item budgeting. We're working very hard at running a lean and mean, fiscally responsible county government. And so I'm going to suggest that we really need to drill down and to look at how we all can approach these kinds of issues, because as we're writing checks for hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's a direct negative impact on our goal to work with our county folks, our voters, and see some legitimate rebates coming out. But if we're going to spend money on these kinds of issues, that really dilutes the opportunity we might have. So, you know, I think it's a good time to soul search on everybody's part on how we run carefully and manage our money and our county money more carefully. Thank you.
Great, thanks. Mm-hmm. All right. Once again, I'll open it up for anybody have any final on this? Okay. So I think at this time, bring resolution to this, I'm going to go ahead and ask this board to go ahead and give a motion of approval for this settlement for Ms. Reed. I think that our legal team's done a great job in negotiating this, and I think it's probably be the best time to put this to rest now. So,
well, it seems to me to be a good business decision, so if you're asking for a motion, I'll make that.
I am, Mr.
So I'm going to move that to approve the settlement for Melissa Reed, agreeing to a $45,000 consideration arising out of the employment of Ms. Reed with the Story County Sheriff's Office, and authorizing the county manager to sign the agreement. Discussion of the matter may include board involvement, which it has, and I hereby move to approve it.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve this settlement, the amount of $45,000. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
And I think that as far as the settlement agreement, so all the terms and conditions of the settlement agreement, it does include the $45,000, but just the terms of the settlement agreement.
And all the terms of the agreement.
Do you agree to that?
Would you like to revise the motion?
Yes, I would.
So I will move to approve the motion to approve the $45,000 settlement consideration plus all of the terms and conditions included in the settlement document.
And you authorize, along with that agreement, Pat Whitten to sign on behalf of the county for the agreement?
Hereby authorize the county manager to sign the settlement agreement.
Yeah.
Get a second on this again?
I'll second that motion.
Moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries again unanimously. All right. Moving along now to item number 14. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment on community and staff reports. Let's start at the left hand of the Sheriff Antonoro.
Nothing at this time.
Thank you, Sheriff. Moving over to the right side under emergency management here, Joe Curtis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Board of Commissioners, and County Commissioner, County Manager. Just a really brief, quick thing to let you know that, you know, as kind of a reminder, we have three trailers that we acquired through a granting process a number of years back that are equipped to allow us to set up on an emergency basis shelters in essentially two or three different areas of the county at a given time. So I recently set up a training session with members of the Citizens Emergency Response Team, the CERT team fellows and ladies, and took them through all of the equipment in these trailers, which includes, each one of them includes 100 cots, 200 blankets, generator, coffee pots, comfort kits, a number of things like that to open the shelter with, as well as what is called the shelter manager's kit, which is all of the Red Cross type equipment and forms and so forth to check people in and track them in a sheltering environment. So we went through all of that and got some good training to these volunteers. So I commend that CERT team for their participation up here in Virginia City this last Saturday. We're going to do another one of those for CERT members who live down in the Lockwood River District area and familiarize them also with those trailers, because one of the trailers is maintained down at our Fire Station 74, and the other one is the other two are maintained up here at the high school. So just wanting to let you know that we are also having a training along that evacuation product or subject matter. Another really quick one, and I'll just mention really quick because on another hat that I have, I'll just let you know that the Comstock Foundation for History and Culture is going to be putting on September 24th and 25th a tour of the Sutro Tunnel site at the permission, with the permission of the owners of the site, the Serpa family, and the Comstock Tunnel Foundation, or Comstock Tunnel Company. So there'll be marketing material that will go out about that. If you've never been down to the Sutro Tunnel to be able to see it in the past, it is, as our county manager so aptly termed it this morning, is truly a historical treasure relating specifically to the Comstock. Just happens to be in Lyon County. But is something that is not likely to be available for anyone to just go see. And it'll be guided tours through that over those 2 days. So you'll be hearing more about that here in the future with marketing and brochures and posters. Any questions?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I went to I think it was the first time they opened it up to the public and had a little show and tell. But it was
in 1888?
Yeah, it was just a portal. Yeah, it's a portal in the tunnel that's full of dirt. And then, which was kind of disappointing, I was hoping we could actually go in. Then the last I heard, it was several years later, that they think it's only caved in for a small ways. I don't know. Are they trying to open it, or is there...
No, the tunnel would not be open, but it does drain water at about 250 gallons a minute. Still through there. I think it's documented that it's caved for somewhere in the neighborhood about 600 feet back. Then they're not sure about the further back than that. But the tours will be... We're doing them different than they were done before. We'll have stations at these various locations, and there will be large banners with photographs of what was at that location during the 1800s, and you'll be able to really see what was there. So we encourage anybody to look into that when the information comes out. That's all. Any other questions?
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay, over at our comptroller's office, Jennifer McCain.
Nothing today.
Nothing today? How about our financial consultant, Tom Gansbury? Anything from Mr. Gansbury today?
I'm going to speak on 8191.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Gansbury. Over to Tourism Department, the VCTC, Denny Dodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. As we enjoy the summer months, most of us here from Northern Nevada know that means hot August nights is just around the corner. The local car club, in fact, kicked off our summer season in the way of cars, anyway, with a little car show this last weekend. But as we prepare for the big show here on the 28th and 29th, we received word just a few days ago that we are well over 250 pre-registered cars. Now, put that in perspective, on Saturday, the biggest day last year, we had about 170 total. That's the pre-registered van showed up the day of, so which the majority do show up the day of. So in other words, pack a lunch. It's going to be a full 2 days of cars here in Virginia City. So with that, there's communication going out to the merchants on street closures, the time of the cruise, the awards, that type of stuff. So a lot of information will be going out to the public to prepare for that event. With that, we had one event that has been postponed, our Bonanza bull riding event that was scheduled for August 13th. It'll be postponed until next year. But in with that, or alongside of that, is the marketing campaign for the Way It Was Rodeo just kicked off. And just to give you a little bit of a tip on that is extremely well received. We are getting several calls on how to participate, how to be a vendor, how to get involved, how to sponsor. I think we're going to hit a home run with this one, just looking at it from just starting our campaign. So exciting things to come. And then finally, just another note, many people are aware of our video campaign, Below the Surface. We had a board meeting with the VCTC on Thursday, and we've promoted three of the videos, three of the 10, and each one of them has received well over 100,000 views per video. A lot of interaction, a lot of comments, and talking with the merchants that were involved in those, a lot of return on investment. So we're seeing a great interaction and great publicity for specific businesses in town, or specific stories, I should say, not necessarily businesses. So that's all I have. Any questions?
Did we ever come to a conclusion on the 4th of July fireworks?
Mr. McGuffey, I think we're still kind of pending the investigation with the fire department on where we're going to be with that. Most likely we'll get a credit. We'll just get our money back, if you will, per the contract. We have a couple options, but I think it might be just cleaner to get our money back. At that point, we'll make the decision that public when we do finalize it and I'll let everybody know what we'll do. If we have reserve funds, they'll go to next year's 4th of July.
Thanks, Andy. We're our communications department. Dave Ballard?
I have nothing right now. I'll just wait until the agenda
is. Very good. Thank you. At community relations, Sherry Nevin.
Good morning, Commissioners. Sherry Nevin. For the record, we've been busy the last couple weeks here. We have been fortunate to receive notification of several grant awards coming to the county. I'll make mention of them here. The first one is from the State Emergency Response Commission. This is an annual granting opportunity. Funds for this grant come from the hazardous materials permit fees that the businesses here in Nevada pay. We received $25,712 from them to purchase a communications tower, which will go out in the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center and improve our public safety communication abilities in that area. The second grant is a United We Stand grant. That grant, funds from that come from the United We Stand license plates that you've seen. We received $25,000 from that grant to purchase a video surveillance system for the county courthouse, and also some funds to purchase narcotic lock boxes for the fire protection district. Item number 16 is another grant, and I'll wait to talk about that. The fire department also received a grant in the amount of $150,000 from the FEMA. This is a safer grant that'll be used to purchase breathing air apparatus for their employees. The district attorney's office was also the recipient of another grant through the Nevada Attorney General's Office. This is their Violence Against Women Act, in the amount of $20,200, and this supports the victim services unit. So we've been fortunate to get quite a bit of money coming in here, the county, the last few weeks. A couple of those grants I will bring to you for formal approval once we have all of the award documents in the next month or so. Joe Curtis and I will be traveling next week to Mobile, Alabama, for a Historic Preservation Forum training conference. A grant made this possible for us to be able to go through the State Historic Preservation Office. We'll be traveling with folks from the state, City of Carson, Reno, and Las Vegas. So we're looking forward to getting a lot of good information to bring back. That's all I have.
Great. Any questions for sure?
Yes. I really don't know if I should ask you or Joe, maybe both. Now, in the Highlands, my one-time experience years ago is I was headed home, I don't know, 10, 11 at night, and I saw embers burning. And what it was somebody had burnt their slash pile and just walked away. And so there's embers on the ground, and all it would take would be a gust of wind, and we would have been a mess in the Highlands. Because there's no cell service, I had to drive home to get to a phone and call the fire department, then drive back to the location so they could make sure they found it and be okay. Is there a possibility that there's a grant could be obtained for cell service for emergency situations, or just to have a service so we can address those emergency situations? You know where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I do, and I might look to either Pat or Austin on this. There was a cell tower that was built out there in the Highlands, and you can see the Monopine
right.
Tower that sits out there. I think the challenge has been finding a provider to go onto that tower.
That's right.
We may be able to look at granting opportunities for bringing in somewhat of a portable cell site. They did that here in Virginia City before they constructed the tower up here. Of course, those are not, they're very costly to do that, but that would be perhaps something we could look at.
Or I don't know if it could be an incentive to help a carrier get on board. I don't, you know, that's, we really need some cell service out there.
And we can certainly look. I think we're going to have challenges because that is a private enterprise, you know, and the access to the funds that Joe and Sherry and everybody tap are usually meant for local governments, for emergency services, for, you know, those types of features. But we can certainly look. And I know Austin and Jason work frequently with the tower guy out there, and Sherry's right on the mark. There's really, these are big corporations that are the cell carriers. It takes time to get in their queue. Their queue is a priority-based thing that could be changed by such as Verizon determining we're not going to do any new locations this year. We're going to move from 4G to 5G or whatever G it is. So it's a tough road, and I congratulate and thank you for least not driving past it and ignoring it like some.
Sherry's our grant lady for the county, and I just thought I'd throw it at her and see if there's any kind of consideration there. That's all. Maybe we can help somebody get on the tower for free, or I don't know. You know, I'm grasping straws right now, trying to. We need something out there.
Thank you.
Hey, may I
chime in? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I did some quick math, and I did it the old-fashioned way like I learned in grade school. But if I added up Sherry's numbers right, that's $279,000, over $250,000 in grants. And that doesn't include the USDA grants that we're getting on the sewer project and countless other grants that we've gotten over the years. It's hard to go get these grants. And I want to point out it's even harder to stay compliant with them on the backside. If you don't stay compliant, then you'll never get any more money from these guys, and they'll be asking for a check back. I learned today, I think from Sherry, that another jurisdiction had actually gotten the $58,000, I think, or one of these chunks of money, you know, and they were non-compliant in their use. So their loss is definitely our gain, and they also had to pony up a check to cover the amount that they had spent in a non-compliant manner. So I want to thank Sherry. I could name a whole long list, so I probably will. Joe, Ann, Gary, you know, Dave, James Dean, Mel Keener, essentially everybody that has worked so closely with Sherry to say, hey, these are the projects that we want, and then we go out after them. I think more than one of these we were actually told no on, if I recall. And then it is because of, really I'm going to put the bulk of the spotlight on Sherry, it is because we are so good at what we do in terms of packaging the grant, making sure the grant fits the parameters of the program that we're applying under, even if we have to tweak it sometimes just a little bit. And then most importantly, again, following up diligently with post-reporting and those types of things. Over $250,000 is a lot of money. And a lot of this came flowing in, I think, less than a week. Mm-hmm. It was a great week. I think Dave was back there just going cha-ching, cha-ching, because every time he turned around, he was getting more grant money for stuff. So I thank you very much for what you do.
And thank you.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you.
All right, moving up next here over to our planning department, Jason Van Hebel.
Sorry for forgetting TAP.
And then we'll also in planning and our human resources and administration, Austin Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. Just a few things I want to update you and those that are with us today. The United States Geological Survey is going to speak at this commission at the next meeting on August 2nd. What they have been doing since the 1990s is conducting water quality and quantity surveys of the Mark Twain Estates and the Highlands. They have provided me and Jason and Dean's staff kind of a summary of their findings of what they found, some good things, some not so good things or whatever. I'm going to save the details for that presentation so the public can come and see that. I've noticed Mr. McGuffey also has noticed out in the Highlands, the 1 acres, as well as the 10-acre board, and the folks down there in the Mark Twain Estates, like Ron Engelbrick and Laura Kokuli, to let them try to spread the word that this presentation will happen. If people are not able to make this meeting, we're trying to arrange for one of the same meetings to take place at the Planning Commission, so folks that get off work late and would like to see these findings will be able to attend. A couple things I'd like to stress on this is the United States Geological Survey is their surveyors. They're not regulators. So their purpose is not to regulate or to fine or to tell on people of what's going on. They have monitored private wells as well as their own monitoring wells in this region. The private wells that have been monitored is through volunteers, property owners that said, will you please come monitor my well? I'd like to participate in a survey and see what my own well is doing. And that is really going to be a goal of the USGS at the next meeting, is to try to get public participation in well monitoring so that the USGS can get a wider range or a scope of study throughout these areas rather than what they have right now is pretty limited with some of the areas that they're monitoring. So again, it's non-regulatory. They are surveyors that just want to share with us their findings. And ultimately, what would happen is staff, under the direction of this commission, would then come up with recommendations. What should we do as far as working with folks throughout the counties to make corrections or make things better? Secondly, I'd like to let this commission, as well as those in attendance today, know that the Marlette Water System will be providing no-cost tours of the Marlette-Hobart Water System. It'll include Marlette Lake, it'll include the pumps, the flumes, the Red House, all of the stuff that goes along with it. This is really a marquee thing that anybody that wants to understand Virginia City's water system, not to mention see some beautiful territory in the Sierras, to attend. And this meeting will happen on September 18th at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it'll go till 3:30, so it's about 6.5 hours. They ask that the folks have four-wheel drive, high-clearance vehicles, to go with these folks or to arrange for their own transportation otherwise.
J. Howard can be reached, and anybody can contact me or our office with details. But 831-0494, and anybody can catch me afterward if you didn't catch that number and arrange for your tour. Lastly, the master plan. Jason and I are still working on the details of this, and we're working through the communities. We had our last workshop in Lockwood, and it was pretty good attendees. And so master plan for the Planning Commission is scheduled for August 4th for adoption by the Planning Commission. They'll make an advisory recommendation to this board that will hear this on August 16th. And at that point, this board will make its decision to adopt the master plan or to amend it back to the Planning Commission for further review. And then last but not least, on the HR side, I just want to let this board know that collective bargaining between the union and the county or our general employees is still proceeding as normal. It's pretty typical that sometimes these will go past the July 1st deadline and things are still moving forward. So that's it. Thank you.
Any questions for Austin?
Great. Just a quick comment, if I may, Austin. I'm so glad to hear that we're doing the well studies. I've had a number of personal requests from the neighborhoods, both Mark Twain and the Highlands, and I'm sure Jack has as well. And everyone's interested in where the county's position is in addressing the water issues we're having. And it would seem to me we need to get the word out to the stakeholders in those neighborhoods to come on August the 4th and really get a firsthand understanding and what their opportunities would be if they'd go ahead and sign on with these studies. But I think that we may be able to at least identify some of the issues that we can address and perhaps resolve.
I agree with you 100%, Commissioner Gilman, and that's what we're trying to do is the outreach to these communities, particularly with folks that communicate well, like the HOA boards and the Mark Twain, the community group, and trying to get people to attend these. And like I said, if we can't get everyone up at this meeting, we'll try to hold one at nighttime in a planning commission as well.
Job well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Austin. Today we have a representative from St. Mary's Art Center, Erica Perry. Do you have anything to report on today?
Oh, there's a green bowl. What's that mean? I know the green bowl.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. I am Erica Perry. I'm the new Executive Director for St. Mary's Art Center. I believe Jack McGuffey wanted to speak a few words in addition. Did you want to create an introduction?
Yes. Okay. I'll come up with you. Carl? Come on up.
Is that what you're doing? Is that to you?
First of all, I'd like to introduce Erica Perry as our new director of the Art Center, and Carl Gambrill. He's the director of the building, takes care of the building and the grounds. They've only been on the job a few months, but just, I mean, they hit the ground running right off the bat, and they're doing a fantastic job. If you need to go over there, take the time and go check out St. Mary's Art Center. The place is looking fabulous. It looks great. They've sanded the floors, redecorated. It's a nice, quality little place to stay if you wanted to stay there. And that's the reason why I'm here, is to stay there. You have beds. Beds need mattresses. The mattresses that they inherited when they took over needed replacement years before they came. And the importance of the beds is because they have artists that live in residence sometimes, just short stays, but they'll stay there maybe a few weeks and do their art. It's kind of a retreat for them. That's why it's called St. Mary's Art Center Retreat. But not only that, the beds are for people who come and have weddings, and they'll be able to stay there. So there's all kinds of functions that where the rooms come in very handy. And this is where St. Mary's makes a good portion of their money to support themselves. Okay, so I came up with the idea that let's have a mattress drive. And so Erica's put ads in the paper and all that, and it's moving along, it's crawling along. And but the thing is we really need the beds now. And you know, we've got a lot of people involved with collecting donations, and I have to thank, you know, Vanessa, she's on the St. Mary's board. Her and Carl, they've been supplying the foods and services for their grand openings and art shows and stuff like that. So that's their contribution. We have T.A. Langer, who has an artist friend who she works with to supply the gift shop at the Art Center with gifts, and that money goes towards the bed. So it's that's working. So, but it was, to me, I like to get things done. And so I reached out to all the elected officials here in Story County. I think I missed one, Jen. She's out of state, I guess. But and asked if they would contribute. And that's why we're here today, too, because we want to, I think everybody was on board to contribute what they can. So here I am. There's a check for me.
So since Commissioner McGuffey challenged the other two commissioners, here's an envelope here for you, Commissioner McGuffey.
It's called Strong Arm.
Yeah.
It goes for a good cause.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, and then I have some too.
Oh, okay.
But I'm giving cash, so I want a receipt back.
So I really appreciate this. It's a good show of community support.
My Can I keep money
support.
For lunch?
We all want you to be successful. And I have personally seen a couple of the beds, and it's embarrassing what they look like. One of them had to bend the spring down so it wouldn't poke up.
Thank you so much.
So, a round of applause for Erica and her team.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh.
Three
of you
together.
Leave the guy in the middle out.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your support of St. Mary's Art Center. Carl and I and the rest of the Board of Trustees and staff and volunteers really appreciate the community support. We are looking forward to participating more in the community, having more interaction locally, focusing on local and regional artists and artisans. An example is this beautiful bowl by Linda Ritter, who is graciously donating and supporting the Art Center. We just opened a new artisan gallery, which offers beautiful work like this. We also have other art exhibits that rotate. We offer workshops and classes. We are the little-known secret for rentals, for room rentals and building rentals. And I think that you will see more of our presence. You've already seen Vanessa, Carl, Molly Burnett participating in the chili cook-off, things of that nature. I happen to be one of the muralists on Marshall's parking lot mural, which I'm very pleased to be a part of. So we're all invested. We're looking forward to the future and working with everyone. And in fact, Sherry Nevin and Katie DeMuth and I participated in an Arts for Hearts community project with the Nevada Arts Council. So I think there is momentum for all of us to collaborate and have a new future where it's more interactive. So we thank everyone very much for their support and time, and thank you for the money.
I want to make a couple of comments. First, these are comments that I rendered during the staff meeting this morning that Jack cannot attend because we have one commissioner there. And that is, I've worked with all of our nonprofit partners for many years now. I think our poster child for many years has always been the Fourth Ward Schools. They've taken a derelict down and out building and done incredibly amazing things over the decades. And I've watched St. Mary's kind of sputter and stop and start. I think it's important to recognize Erica, Vanessa, Molly, the rest of the board, Carl, serving as building guy and what they do for one of the county treasurers. The county owns this building, but we provide little to no funding for it. We have our nonprofit partners and tenants do that. And I think if you look at the inventory of county properties, and I always leave one off, I can't remember, but you've got the G Posse taking great care of the ice house. You've got Erica and her team now taking great care of St. Mary's. The fourth ward, as I've already mentioned, the fire museum. But I think for the first time in many, many years, well, in ever for me, I think under the leadership of both your board and you, you guys are now posed to become that rival sister competition to a great institution like the Fourth Ward School. And I'm really excited for that. So I wish you very well. And the other thing I want to do, a couple things, and Chris, this is, if he's there, he's not, I'm going to challenge that man. I'm going to challenge that man outside the glass door to reach in his pocket. So, Mr. Norman, your timing is right. Did you happen to bring a check with you? We certainly would hope at some point in time you'd consider supporting St. Mary's Arts Center to any level that you might be able to.
St. Mary's Hospital?
Yes, but the Arts Center. It's a nonprofit organization. So it is tax deductible, I might add.
I support the hospital all the time.
There you go. So I'll follow up with you on that. And there's another gentleman I want to challenge here for just a minute, and that's our former sheriff, Jim Miller. I'm going to give a shameless plug here in a little bit for, a fundraiser that Jim's doing. And I'm just going to say, time for you to reciprocate and put your money where your mouth is, bud. The other thing I want to do is, for those of you that may not know it, is I kind of want to put a spotlight on Jack here for just a minute, Commissioner McGuffey. But I want to do it in such a way that puts the spotlight on all the commissioners. For the first meeting in January every year, we appoint commissioners and staff, but oftentimes commissioners, to sit on the various boards of organizations. Marshall on the Comstock Historic District, the Fire Museum, and others. Lance on the VCTC, and several others as well. Jack on NACO, on St. Mary's, on the 4th Ward, and I'm probably missing many there, but it's a lot of work. The V&T, thank you. Well, we're going to be talking about that separately, but it's a lot of work that, particularly the commissioners, that really don't get paid for and have other career interests. I mean, it's pretty easy for staff sometimes to sit. Although Mike Kazmierski's 7 a.m. or 7:30 a.m. meetings in Reno when it's snowing is a bear for me. But, I got to tell you, I applaud our commissioners, and Jack, I think you kicked this off in a great way, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I did fail to mention that, the reason why we're short on money to take care of these mattresses is because St. Mary's has been hit with some big expenses. The boiler took a lot of money to get it back up to par. And then the escape rail on the side of the building was pulling the building apart, and it had to be remounted, a new foundation set for it. We're still paying for that, and we're making payments on that. So it's like we don't have the extra money to buy mattresses. Thank you again for all your support. This is going to, according to Erica talking to her about this, she thinks that it'll put us over the top and we should be able to move right away on getting those mattresses.
Yeah. We will do our very best. Yeah. Thank you again, everyone. Thank you, Jack. Great.
You bet.
Thank you, Erica.
Yeah. Okay. Nice job.
Next up, over community development, Dean Haymore.
Yeah.
Thank you, commissioners. I'll try to make it pretty sweet. Since the new nuisance ordinance has been put in place, we are tenfold of nuisance complaints, almost a full-time position for one person to stay up with those. We will be going into our second phase of actually sending out some letters of condemnation on a few of the buildings, things like that. Our new inspectors have been walking the boardwalk. They're going to be walking it again today and tomorrow for repairs on the boardwalk and just talking to those violators that we see that are using our personal garbage cans for their personal garbage cans and remind them what the county rules are and that they should be getting their own garbage cans. We are working hard out in the industrial park and throughout the county. We get to celebrate a couple of things this month. On the 28th, Aqua Metals is having their grand opening. Most of you all were invited for that new facility. And then on the 29th is a private invitation-only grand opening of the Tesla facility. So that is going on the 29th. We also are just permitted and under construction another 3 million square foot at Tesla, which needs to be up in 10 months. We are now starting getting the power and the mechanical systems on the Panasonic side of Tesla, and so what we're calling bump and start. We completed the completion of the Fulcrum separation facility. You will be invited probably in August for a grand opening on that one. They have started bump and start and starting that those equipment bug outs and things like that. We have another 700,000 under construction. Chewy.com is now moving in. We gave it a temporary CBO to move in their facility of 556,000 square foot. And then we have another company taking where Chewy is. And then we have a new company called Thrive Markets that's going in on where the Zulily's building is. Lance is working. We're working on closing and starting the first Marriott's out there. And I'm working on another project to start a buffet lunch and dinner, about 16,000 square foot, 24-hour operation food venue currently. We have some others that are starting out there that are continuing going on and increasing their capacity. BioNutraceuticals, which is a real good one, hit us up yesterday. I knew about it. We're going to put another meal in that one. So they're permitting, they're growing on that. One of the things I wanted to bring to your attention that Pat and I got an email from Stacy this morning is this is the first time all the companies out at Tesla have to have a Story County business license. And to have a Story County business license, you've got to have a state of Nevada business license. We just got hit with an email from Tesla this morning that one of the companies that is going to be doing maintenance on their equipment went to the state and was told that their business license is going to be $35,000. And because they have a lot of stock, it's a big corporation and stuff, and they have a lot of stock. And they're afraid it's the margin tax or whatever, and I don't know how that works. I just got the notices. We're going to look into it to see how we can help them. But this is the first time we've been told that a business license from the state of Nevada for one of the companies that are out there providing a service to the companies out, Tesla has to pay a $35,000 business license. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
And my intent with that, and I'm glad timing is almost perfect. This wasn't staged, Mike, but with Mike here, what we'll do is I'll forward that email to him. I mean, we have no direct contact with anybody in GoEd anymore. I don't, anyway. But we'll forward that to Mike and let Mike and his team run it to ground and see what we can do. So.
Just wanted to bring one other thing. Gary Haynes is not here, and he brought it up in our meeting last Friday, and Pat talked about it. I'm just going to bring it up and talk about it. And the current Painted Rock Bridge is not will not carry the weight, so he can get his fire trucks across it. So he asked about the maybe bridge that's sitting down on Rogers Land, that maybe we look at putting that bridge that was down at Mustang, down at Painted Rock, and put a bridge in that's sufficient enough for that, plus gives another bridge lane. Pat has told us to look at it, and so I'm going to go do some measuring and things like that. Of course, there'll be costs associated with that, some foundations and things like that, but we do feel that is a good thing for Painted Rock and a good use for that bridge.
Would that be in addition to the current bridge?
Yes. We would leave both bridges there.
All right.
So, that, Jack?
Gary, would the bridge like they use at the V&T over 50, would that be sufficient?
It would, but this is all put together. We have just, and it'll carry the loads. We have to put some foundations. It'll make the span. That's the biggest thing, the span.
Well, just keep in mind that B&T has one or two sections of that bridge left over. Okay. It was all donated. And now they need to get rid of it. They're talking about cutting it up for scrap. So, well, if you know of it.
Where is that? Because I'd like to go take a picture. I'm working with Tesla to put a fourth entry on the lawn.
It should be out there at Eastgate somewhere, because they're supposed to move it off the Draco, away from the Draco property. So,
okay.
Do you have Dwight?
Yeah, I can get hold of Dwight.
You know, why don't you give me, I would give Dwight a call.
But I'm working on getting another bridge crossing at the lawn, and Tesla asked me for a cheaper way because building a whole concrete bridge across that main of drainage, and they're looking at a fourth entry for the Tesla project.
Right.
So that's a good one.
So, yeah, they don't have any use for it. They don't think they could sell it, so maybe you can nab it before they cut it up for scrap.
Okay. Thank you.
Dean, one other item. Would you forward that email to me, please, on the business license, and I'll get that to Steve Hill this afternoon.
Okay.
Pat, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Dean. Moving right along now, over at the District Attorney's Office, D.A. Langer.
Nothing today, Mr. Chairman.
County Manager Whitten.
Yeah, several things, and I'll make them quick. Dean's mentioned these businesses. You know, I just want to point out particularly to the public. I know the commission's aware of this because we often have you out at the industrial park. But if you think about some of these names, they're fascinating when you really glance inside of them. I mean, BI Nutraceuticals, you know, on the surface, they're a company that takes twigs and bark and roots and stuff and grinds them up. But when you look at their processes and the sterilizations that they're required to go through to become food quality products that are essentially usually shipped overseas, they're a fascinating place. They've got chemistry labs and analysis labs in there that I think Dean had a great idea. He asked if our local or high school biology classes might want to tour it, and they were very receptive to that. Thrive Markets is amazing. We Googled them just to see who they are, and they're a big company. Nature's Way is another one. You know, there's a whole lot of those 120 businesses, or if you're Lance Gilman, 350, 375 businesses that are out of Tribe.
I get all my news from Dean.
those businesses really, in my opinion, are quiet sleepers in many ways in the Nevada market, the northern Nevada market, and certainly in Story County. So, kind of pay attention, and I think we're going to work on maybe trying to feature either some of them. We're working on a newsletter. We've got our first issue out, but we're going to try to really put a spotlight on some of those and maybe even tweak our website just a little bit, put a business of the month up out there. So there's that. I promised I would shamelessly pimp out Mr. Miller, former sheriff. He entered my offices today unannounced and unbeknownst to me, and he had his own hat, but he also apparently has a CCW because he flashed a gun, but he did not. But he's selling tickets to the Story County Jeep Posse's annual barbecue, which will be held, I believe, Saturday afternoon and evening of the 30th. And I'm kind of amazed. This is a great group, by the way. I'm a member. But I'm kind of amazed that they're only $15 for the steak dinner that they usually put out. It's a great deal.
Yeah, it's been that way for years, too, and they don't want to change that. It's just a great thing.
I used to think it was a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
But I got
your bar tab.
Yes, there you go. It's a great night, and it is the only time, to the best of my knowledge, you can actually play 21 or blackjack in Story County right now. So you ought to grab some tickets, and even if you don't go, Roger, maybe you know some people that maybe you know some people that would love to go to it. So see Jim. You know, I think it's and I did not get this on the agenda, so I'm going to be very careful how I do it. The 30th of July is sneaking up on me much faster than I thought. And the importance of the 30th of July is it is a deadline for first cuts at bill draft requests, BDRs, to go in for the 2017 legislative session. And I'm going to tell you, I've been contemplating working an awful lot specifically with Commissioner McGuffey, but also Hugh, who I'm going to talk about in a minute. We continue to have major communications and functional problems with the Nevada Commission for the Reconstruction of the BNT Railroad. They have some great members on their board, and then they've got some that, very bluntly, I have no use for. And we get mixed signals from them. And the mixed signals are to the point of Story County's pledged $100,000 to Story County's pledged $300,000 to almost anything imaginable, not as a board, but as individual board members, some of those that I have no use for. I got a communication from Mayor Kroll and Dwight Millard the other day, two great board members together with Commissioner McGuffey. And, you know, they still want to actively find solutions, but we've been chasing our tail on this problem for years now, and not getting anywhere. So I'm going to pose this so that you don't deliberate on an item that's not on the commission agenda in such a way that to let you know that it is my intent to, I did silence these, sorry, that is my intent to submit for bill draft either the Story County's one and only bill draft or potentially through either Senator Settlemyer or Assemblyman Wheeler a bill draft request that would ask for consideration to reconfigure that commission. There are currently five counties on there and a whole bunch of political appointees. There really are only two local government jurisdictions with any dog in this hunt, that is Carson and Story. We should be on there and need to be on there, probably through continued representation from somebody like Commissioner McGuffey and Mayor Kroll, but that's their choice. We got way too many people on there that, you know, are more train buffs than they are business people. I would tell you, based on information that I get that is public record since it's mailed to me, I get a report every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday that that train runs. And thanks to Jack, we not only know what the gross revenue was and the number of riders for the railroad, we also know what the gross cost was just for the train. That's not for the marketing. That's not for staff overhead. That's not for anything else that amounts to an awful lot of money. And if you just take the cost of the train, I think once this year, maybe twice, they actually broke even or made a couple of $100. Every other time, they lose money just on the train. So it's a recipe for bankruptcy. I think you can see those signals when they're talking about trying to cut up bridges for scrap metal value. Mm-hmm. They've sold Draco, which was a warehouse building that was their only asset. So I'd ask the commission, I will ask you to concur retroactively once I get it in, but I would ask you to individually let me know your thoughts, because it's my intent probably immediately after this meeting to initiate contact with Mary Walker and get a BDR in. So,
that's getting close to the agenda item.
I'm good. So that's the VNT BDR. That's the bad news. I want to end this on a good news note. As I mentioned with the last meeting, you know, we're missing, you know, a key player, our little leprechaun and controller, Hugh Gallagher. And I got an email from him at 8:20 this morning that I'm going to read for everybody. Pat, would you please express my heartfelt thanks to all those who came by to see me, sent cards, and left voice messages of concern. I truly appreciate the gestures, and believe me, it has helped in my recovery. For the record, I am doing well, progressing well enough for the cardio doctor to say I can now have one glass of wine and three Irish car bombs a day. However, I will not test those waters until I am under your proper supervision again. Thanks, Hugh. So that's an update from A Street.
Very good. Great. Thank you, Pat. Any clerk's office? Nothing today? All right. I don't think I skipped over anybody. Okay. That's going to go ahead and conclude the committee and staff reports. This time I'm going to back up and go back to item number 12, and this is discussion only. And we'll take no action. This will be a presentation today
from President and CEO Mike Kuzmierski of the Economic Development Authority of Western Nevada, also known as EDON. So, Mike, if you'd like to come on up to the podium.
Okay. Slides are ready. These are loaded. I've got a flash.
Okay, and they're loaded.
Okay, so you're ahead. And here's your.
I can pass them on.
Flash?
Oh, I thought we loaded.
It gives you an opportunity to.
Okay. Well, while we do this, I do want to introduce officially again Mike. Mike's been here before, and Mike is the CEO and president of the Economic Development Authority of Western Nevada. Mike has brought a whole new life and vitality to EDON. I've worked with EDON for many years. Prior to Mike, it was a challenge. I'm not saying that there aren't challenges. Sometimes still, especially 7:30 meetings. But I will tell you that working with Mike and Mike's group, and especially a couple of superstars that we get to work with, he's got a great team. But, Stan Thomas, who is the Executive Vice President for Business Expansion, business gain, new business, whatever it is. Stan is phenomenal to work with. I met with a small company yesterday that was a direct referral from Stan, and I'm pleased to say that I'm pretty confident we're going to add. Mike's going to go over a goal objective here, I'm sure, if this is the one I see on usually on Thursday mornings once a month. But he's got a goal of not only bringing quality businesses into the region, but also bringing headquarters here, because once their headquarters are here, great things happen with some of the support teams. And Story County may actually land one of these headquarters, which I am extremely thankful to Stan and his team for that opportunity. And then another unsung hero that I hope maybe next year when you come you can bring one or both of them is Nancy McDermott. Nancy was the president of AT&T Nevada, as I recall, right?
She was one of the VPs, yes.
Yeah, one of the big ones. Mike pirated her away, and she is now in charge of business retention and expansion. And Dean's out in these businesses a lot. I try to go out there at least once a month. Lance is always present, Roger now too. But I got to tell you, Nancy's in every one of these businesses saying, how can I help you? What can I do? They experienced little bumps in the road and big bumps like we're talking about with Tesla. Nancy and her team swoops in and seems to make everything right. So that's a long way of introducing our leader when it comes to economic development in Western Nevada. So here he is, Mike Kuzmierski.
Thank you, Pat. Thanks to the commissioners and really the staff here, which is first class. I mean, Pat, Dean, and many others that we work with on almost a daily basis in Surrey County. We see our organization as really your economic development team. We're promoting the region. As we bring companies and prospects to the region, we try and land them in the region, and obviously Surrey County is a big part of our effort. So I'm going to go through some slides. You've seen in some cases these before. I'll highlight really some of the impacts on Story County, because oftentimes we talk about Reno, we talk about Reno Sparks, because that's the MSA that hits the radar nationally. That's the MSA that companies look to, and it's that name draw, much like the Reno Tahoe Industrial Park. You talk about Tahoe, but Tahoe's a long way from TRI. Well, it's because it helps people that are not familiar with the state and region kind of zone in on the area, and then we promote the region as we get our hands on them. So I'm going to hit pretty aggressively some of the impacts on Story County this time, a little bit more detail, and then offer a chance for any questions you might have. Start first with, I'm pushing you up the slide. Okay, it's the right arrow. Our focus is job creation, and we do that in three main areas, attracting companies. As Pat mentioned, Nancy works on retaining and expanding, and we have a VP for entrepreneurial development, which we think is incredibly important in growing the next set of jobs
and that's Doug Irwin. And each of those three legs we put a lot of energy into. This is a little bit hard to read, but you can see attraction, retention, and entrepreneurial growth are the three key legs. But we now, because of our success in this region, are really starting to focus on workforce development. If we don't have the employees, the workers, to fill the positions of the jobs coming in, they're going to stop coming. There's no question about that. So we have a very intense focus on workforce development. Now we've actually added one person to our team with a focus on workforce development. How do we take the workforce we have, upgrade their skills so they can meet the needs of these employers in these $25 to $30 an hour jobs that are coming to our region? And then finally, community development, which really talks to, and sometimes there's a thought, why are we talking about downtown Reno? I mean, that's a small part of our region. Well, the reality is, for the technology workforce, for the people we're trying to bring to this region, if our downtown isn't visitor-friendly, isn't family-friendly, isn't more friendly to the kinds of people we want to attract to the region, it'll be much more difficult to attract talent to the region. So there are things we're working on in community development that allow us to grow the economy in the long term. So that's really the strategic plan for EDON. Just coming through some of the data points and updating them. You've seen this chart before, but we're pretty proud of the fact that we are getting people to visit this region. The prospect visits this region, and we show what we have, and buildings are part of it, and you know, workforce and tax incentives and all the other things we show them, but they get a feel for what's here. It's a business-friendly environment that's great for business. We get to show them what's here, we land 80% of the prospects. 80% closure rate on any company that visits and makes a decision. That number, as you go through and look at our, we work very hard to get more companies to visit us, and you can see each year in the last several years, we've gone from 4 to averaging around 10 visits per month. And these are pretty interesting visits, all kinds of companies. And when people think it may be slowing down, we had 7 prospect visits last week. 7 last week. So you start looking at, are things really slowing down? The answer is heck no. In fact, they may be picking up a little. The reason I have September circled there, a lot of people think the switch or light switch turned on when Tesla came here. Look at what happened before Tesla. I mean, things were happening pretty aggressively long before the Tesla announcement. So what Tesla has done is allowed us to continue our success in attracting companies to look at us, and our closure rate remains in the 75 to 80% range. So what this results in is you continue to see the job numbers go up. The 2008 to 11 average is about 800 a year, and every year since then our job count has gone up. With this year beating last year's record of 3,000, we finished the year out at about 3,200. That's a huge number for a community in a region our size. 3,200 new primary jobs. This community probably could expect and be happy with about 1,200 and maybe 1,500. So you can see what's happening here is far more than most other communities are experiencing, and it really is not slowing down. If you look at Story County projects in the last, whatever this is, 15, 16, 4 specific projects. But if you look back a couple of years, 24 projects since January 2012. Of the 100 or so, 24 landed in Story County. And we're out in TRI probably, I asked Stan yesterday, he said at least once a week and sometimes more than that. And Nancy's out there personally visiting the companies that are there because it doesn't do us much good to land them if they don't stay here and grow and be successful. And that's what Nancy's team does. So we're out there pretty aggressively in order to support growth in Story County. And then as we look ahead, and this is a pretty interesting chart because these projects are done. We just haven't finished a formal announcement on them, but 3 of the 10 or so will land in Story County. Some of the larger ones tend to land out here. And if you go to our next slide, these are done deals, and these are the ones we're working on that have visited, in some cases, multiple times. The region, they look at multiple parcels of land, multiple buildings, and we're in the negotiation. We're talking about tax incentives. We're talking about workforce. We're grinding away. These are what we would expect to be announcements over the next 6 to 12 months, and the majority of them are actually teed up to land in Story County.
So it is certainly not slowing down. In fact, it is increasing. When we talk about hot prospects and job activity and activity that we project here in Story County. Obviously, Tesla, everyone knows about. More important piece for Tesla, and I met with Jens Peters Clausen this morning, his greatest concern is workforce. And we're putting renewed emphasis on that. We'll put a team together. If they can't get the workforce out here, then we've got problems. And most people that work with Tesla know they can be difficult to work with at times. And that said, they are growing and hiring at an accelerated pace. And we've projected that, but we've got to be able to meet their workforce needs as we go forward. And then certainly Switch is also a wonderful addition to Story County and what we have in the region, and we'll add thousands of technology workers to the region as we go forward. If you look at where the companies are coming from, California is still a big part of where they're coming from, but the reality is 4 years ago, 65 to 70% of the companies came from California. We just kind of took whoever bounced over the mountain. What we're getting now is national and international appeal for the region. And we're getting more and more people that didn't know where Reno was. They thought we were a suburb of Vegas and now understand we are an up-and-coming community. And when I say Reno, the Reno MSA. And again, manufacturing. 4 years ago, almost none of our prospect activity was manufacturing. Now it's the bulk of our activity. We made manufacturing our top priority for the region because we knew it would fit well in the region. And as we go forward now, manufacturing continues to grow. The challenge with manufacturing ultimately is the workforce, the education system to produce the talent to meet the needs of this growing workforce. Most kids don't grow up saying, I want to be a manufacturer. So we are working closely with the schools to help them understand why manufacturing is such a great opportunity going forward and why manufacturing now is much different than it was even 10 or 15 years ago. It's very technology-oriented, it pays very well, and it's a huge opportunity for our kids in the years ahead. This is an interesting data point as we look at how do we rank nationally. These are 2015 and 2013 data points. 2013, we ranked 97th of MSAs as economic hotspots, and in 2015, we've moved to fourth. Now, let's realize that's before Tesla added one employee. You can imagine where we are if we had data as of today, or certainly in the years ahead. So what this shows you is dramatic improvement in comparison to the national numbers. And then recently, the hottest places for new and expanding businesses in Area Development Magazine. Top mid-sized cities, Reno ranked number one. And you can, again, look at the data points. And again, when we talk about Reno, we talk about the MSA, which drives growth in the entire region. Pretty exciting data points when you look at this. When you compete against the 375 businesses, 394 MSAs that they looked at, we're ranked ninth out of 394. And this is data that still doesn't reflect some of the numbers we have from last year. So exciting growth, exciting improvement in our overall economy. We mentioned the BR&E program, retention expansion, business retention and expansion program, which we also include as workforce. We're making great progress there. Nancy and her team have physically visited nearly every primary employer in the region, visits 200 companies a year, and works to support them and meet their needs. What's interesting is we talk about all these new companies, 85% of the companies we have here now are growing. They're adding employees. So when you talk about workforce challenges, these challenges will be exacerbated by this internal growth multiplied by the new company growth. So we really have to take on this workforce challenge. And then the Workforce Consortium, we've worked to assemble all the players that can help us on the workforce side. Because I will tell you that the growth in this region will stop if we don't get our hands around developing workforce and adding workforce to the region, and it's the right kind of workforce. So these are the partners we're working with. We meet on a monthly basis. We've got a whole lot of programs in place. I was down in Vegas last week talking to state legislators. How do we get more state money into the workforce development programs? How do we get more of our adults that don't have a high school GED, high school diploma or GED, how do we get them up to that level because that's what it takes to get them into the community colleges, to get them trained to fill some of these positions. Most people don't realize we have over 40,000 adults in this region that don't have the high school or GED equivalency that could help us fill our jobs if we can just move them up a notch or two in their skills. And finally, entrepreneurial ecosystem. In this town right here is built by entrepreneurs. I mean, obviously, you know that. But on the entrepreneurs we're working with, they're more technology-oriented, startup-oriented. And what we want to do is help create an environment where entrepreneurs can connect and be successful and get capital and grow in our region and don't have to have a great idea but move to Silicon Valley to grow their company. If they can grow it here, we can grow the next Tesla right here in this region. And we've made some progress. Quite a few awards nationally on our success on the entrepreneurial side. We're pretty excited with where we are. And we've actually gotten Sierra Angels. And they live up on the hill there in Tahoe. And I like to say they watch the sun set over the Bay Area every day. And they haven't really wheeled around and looked at the sun rising here in the Reno Sparks area. We got them down Saturday night into the Innovation Center. They have a lot of connections in the Bay Area and a lot of money. And they can help us grow this entrepreneurial ecosystem. But we've already had great progress to this point. You've seen the EPIC report, our projections, 52,000, 64,000 population increase. We say that's the most likely scenario. We continue to believe that. The report is out, and the tracking so far reflects our projections at 52,000 new jobs. Tesla really hasn't started hiring. Panasonic really hasn't started hiring. Switch hasn't really started hiring. And yet we're on track at a rate of 1,000 new jobs for this region every month. And that's got to scare people that didn't believe this was possible even a year ago. You can't really see that very well on the wall, but it's on the slide. And we went ahead and purchased this billboard to get the anti-Tesla message down and really help welcome Tesla and Switch to the region. It's one way to help communicate the message. Story County is a part of that message. And Jens Peters this morning thanked us for that. So just kind of a heads up, we want to make sure that Tesla feels welcome here and we can help them succeed.
All their employees have been thanking me.
Oh, have they?
Oh, I get thank yous every day for that.
Good, that's good to hear. So that's a short update on what's going on. I will tell you that in my view, this region doesn't succeed without Story County, and Story County doesn't succeed without this region. So it's incredibly important that we have the partnership we have. I can tell you Pat leads the charge when it comes to working together as a team, and we're excited to continue that effort. So I would turn it over to Pat for any questions and or the commissioners.
Just a couple of quick comments, if I may, and then let there be questions from the commission and the public. For those of you that would like a copy of Mike's presentation, there are, I think, two extra copies back on the back panel after we provided those. And you can get a hold of either Austin or myself, preferably via email, and we'd be happy to mail you the PowerPoint presentation as well. So, because I think there are some great numbers in there. Mike clearly has his act together when it comes to this stuff. And I want to circle back again on somebody that I mentioned that I think just does a heroic job that we don't recognize enough, and that's the Business Retention and Expansion Group under Nancy. I look back this year, and while we've landed the Teslas and the Switches and Aqua Metals and some of those, the other things that have happened that sometimes go unstated and unthanked are, look at how many businesses that Dean and I and Lance and Austin and others work with that have come in, established in a small footprint, Zulily, in a small building, Jet.com, in a startup operation, Chewy.com, and I can go on and on. And those are the people that have outgrown and said, we love it here, we want to stay here. So in comes Nancy, in comes the whole economic development team. It can be Lance if it's new land being acquired. It can definitely be Dean and Fritz Klingler from a plan review and permitting process, and we help these companies continue to grow. I don't know how many hundreds of site selector and initial meet and greets that we've done, but I know if Dean doesn't say it, I do, or or Stan does or Lance does, plan to grow. And we give that message essentially to every business that we work with because they will succeed here. Mike's closure rate of 80% is, I'm not in direct sales, I haven't been in direct sales in a long time. It almost is an unbelievably successful number, but that speaks to the region, that speaks to the quality of the overall team, not any one individual. And with that, I'll leave it to the rest of, other than to say I consider it an honor to be the county's designee on the EDOT board. So, despite 7:30 meeting.
Commissioner Guffey, do you have any questions for Mike?
So the EDOT, your numbers here are related to EDOT's figures and the companies you've dealt with directly. Are there other companies, is there other companies that haven't gone through EDOT or Northern Nevada Economic Development Agencies? Or
I can answer that, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes. Yeah. Opportunities come in any number of ways.
Yeah.
Oftentimes we will actually be the initiative. Dean gets countless calls on weekends from companies. I heard from Mark Siegel that you're the guy to call. Dean then does a SWOT assessment, takes a look at what the best approach is, but perhaps it might be involving EDON, perhaps it might not. A lot of it depends on what they want. For 100 companies, they're going to have 100 different game plans. Some of them don't want to talk to government. Some of them don't want to talk to the economic developers. Some of them don't want to talk to the park developers. So you just have to kind of take those and work within their nuances. But oftentimes, it will be EDON, the Stan Thomases of the world calling me, or the people calling direct like yesterday and saying, Stan Thomas said, I need to meet with you. So you get that referral coming that way, and then conversely, we may determine, oh, you're going to be eligible for some of the great tax incentives and abatements that there are in the state and other programs such as LEED or anything else. So we then turn around and refer back into EDON to bring them in the loop as well, along with NV Energy, along with many others. So yes is the answer. There are many that may not even be in EDON's circle.
So the big numbers are actually larger than what we're seeing here. Can I assume that?
Yeah. I would say yes, absolutely. Yeah. I can tell you right now, an exciting one that we're dealing with, that we had a meeting at Lance's the other day, that may go from one location to up to 5 locations, I think, and generate new revenues. I don't even think we've brought EDON into play yet, because we haven't had to. We will if we need that support, but yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any comments, Mr. Gill?
No. Thank you, Mike. Nice presentation.
Yes.
Come a long ways.
Exciting times.
These are exciting times, yeah. And we appreciate the working relationship that the county has with you and your agency. That's terrific. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to go ahead and make any comments or ask Mr. Kuzmierski any questions?
I will just comment one thing. We're seeing a generation of 3 or 4 companies.
Depending on how long you're going to go on, do you want to come up to the microphone? Yeah. Otherwise, the transcribers will have a really difficult time picking it up.
I'm seeing a companies that have invested into us, like Diaper.com. They've sold out, and now that's Jet.com. They're coming back in. The Chewy building, those guys I've been dealing with for 3 different, and they've reinvested 3 different times. And so with EDON's help and our great economic development team, we're seeing them coming, bringing new companies, coming back, and Sue Lilly's one that I remember the first time me and Pat met with that guy with Sue Lilly's, and now they have a 700-something thousand square foot building. So now you're starting to see signs that go up that says Quincy, a Amazon fulfillment center. You're going to see another one going up, PetSmart we've been working with. It's going to be a FedEx fulfillment center that we just approved in there. So FedEx is coming in and they're doing sub companies. eBay, you're going to see a name, a change of eBay because that eBay fulfillment center just got bought out by Texas Investors and everything else. And we're in the operations of changing that name for that. And so it's going on, and then they just call me up and say, well, we're going to do a $9 million expansion. We're going to do an $18 million expansion, and we get those things done with our team very rapidly, and we have a lot of meetings. The one that Pat's talking about called me when I was in Salt Lake City on a graduation for my grandson, and set up a meeting the next 2 days and then a week later. And it was, I don't know how long we've been trying to get a major hotel out there, and this guy calls us up directly, and then we have a big meeting, and they're ready to go. And so, but it's Edon, it's a whole team that works together that makes it happen.
Thanks, Dean. Anything else?
I'm good if everybody else is good.
I'm good.
Okay. Mike, thank you for taking time out of your day to come up and give your presentation to us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And again, it's exciting to be part of a winning team. And thanks to the team you have here, it's been a lot of fun. So thank
Great.
You.
Thanks again.
Thank you. See you in a year.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on now to item number 15. This is board comment. We'll take no action or public comment. Mr. McGuffey, do you have anything on your list today?
Yeah, a couple of little things. First, I'd like to acknowledge that I noticed that the Virginia City signs on the end of town, you can read them now, especially at night. I don't know how that became. Can you weigh in on that, Pat?
I would be happy to. As you know, about a year ago, we commissioned either new, brand new welcome signs or a replacement welcome sign. We only had one. And we went to a local craftsman and very talented graphic artist, Nick Fain at MX Trophies. Nick and his wife recently made a major investment in the Divide area of Virginia City with both Divide Fitness and MX Trophies. And Nick created those, and we had a small committee kind of pass judgment and say, yeah, we really like it. I think, you know, again, it shows a good sign of an artist that can take a look at something and 6 months, 9 months later say, that didn't come out exactly as I envisioned. And he had a metal sign that was then etched out. Initially, there was no background behind it, so it was very hard to see Welcome to Virginia City. He fixed that with a darker background to contrast the metal sign. But as that sign has aged, and I think the artist's word is patinaed or whatever it is, it became harder and harder to see, especially in certain lighting conditions. So one day, Nick came to me and said, I don't like my signs. Can I do something about it? And the next thing you know, that's what we have. So it shows you what local talent can do. And I think, once again, we're proud of them. And I can tell you I'm proud of Nick.
Yeah, they look great. I attended the Lockwood, well, we had the car show last Saturday, the Comstock Classic car show. Of course, I'm a member of that. It was a good car show. We were a little light, low, maybe 15 cars compared to last year. But we had a lot new cars, a lot more of new variety of cars. A couple C-cabs that were pretty impressive. They came all the way from Canada for our show. And so that was, I don't think they came just for our show. I believe they were headed down here for the Hot Rod this night's convention, but we drew their attention, and that's good. There's a lot of new faces. I went around to every group that was there and talked and introduced myself and thanked everybody for coming. And yeah, there were some that have come since the first one, and they're religious about coming to our car show. They love our park. And I really have to give an attaboy to our school board. We tried to park on the baseball field before, and it fell through somehow. I went to the school board meeting and got in front of Todd and Rob Slavey. I can't name all the board members, but got them all on the same page and let us park on the ball field. Steve Shreveril, he came up and unlocked the gate, marked all the sprinkler heads, helped guide cars,
We didn't have an issue. The place was left immaculate. That's the kind of people we have coming to our car show. There's nobody hot rotting or leaving trash behind. Very good people. They really appreciated the fact that they could park on lawn versus the pavement. And they love our park. And I'd like to thank also the county for chipping in a bounce house for the kids. I don't think I ever saw it empty the whole time. So I want to thank you for that. And then lastly was after the car show and cleaning up, I was able to make it to the Lockwood's 100th birthday. I got there for about the last hour of it, and the place was packed. Oh, there was a good turnout. I was very impressed. So I got to visit with a few of them, and that was a great event. And I'll leave, and we, of course, we've addressed the V&T, so I'll just call it good.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Guffey. Commissioner Gilman?
Yeah, just to follow up on Jack's, we held the centennial celebration down in Lockwood over the weekend. Congratulations to the community. A lot of effort put into it, and it was well attended. They had a lot of events, and they had a lot of folks with various crafts, and they had a jail, and so I made it to jail. I had to buy my son bought my way out. but there was a lot of community spirit down there. They're creating a DVD that we'll all be given copies of. And it's interesting because they've tracked the 100 years of development of Lockwood from the gold that coins that originally purchased the community through all the various transitions they've gone through. And I think we're going to have kind of an interesting pictorial that we might want to display here somewhere if we can get copies and see what kind of a document we get. But I think it would be fun to showcase Lockwood as one of our premier communities now in Story County. And so they're going to be offering us some nice information along those lines. So kudos to them. They did a great job. Thank you.
And I have just the place to do that because we happen to have an old jail with a lot of empty display cases. And I think that would look wonderful in one of those display cases. So consider it done.
We'll pass the word along.
Yeah, there was talk about putting me in that jail, and I told them, well, you have your first escapee.
Is that all, Mr. Commissioner?
Yes, sir. That's good.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
I have something that I'd like to read. This comes from people affectionately known as the River People, those that live in the Rainbow Bend Lockwood neighborhood. And this is a proclamation. It's a proclamation by Lockwood Centennial Committee recognizing Lance Gilman as honorary mayor. Whereas Lance Gilman has adopted our area in Story County as his own. Whereas Lockwood citizens on the Centennial Celebration Committee have voted unanimously that this honor be bestowed on Lance Gilman. Whereas Lockwood citizens benefit from the generosity Lance Gilman has shown to our area with food for Hillside Elementary students, especially with programs that send home food for kids on the weekend who might otherwise be hungry. Whereas Lance Gilman has donated food to the residents of Lockwood that is distributed by the Lockwood Food Distribution Program, which has fed many who are temporarily needing assistance, as well as many who are permanently disabled or less fortunate as they may eat healthy meals. Whereas Lance Gilman is active in all areas of our county in his capacity as commissioner and liaison to our senior citizens center, donations have enhanced many of the county family and civic functions. Now, therefore, the Lockwood Centennial Committee proclaims Lance Gilman as our honorary mayor for the Lockwood Centennial Celebration and do call upon all residents to afford him the honor and respect his title implies. And this is signed by Larry Huddleston for We Care and 10 other members of his committee.
Oh, Marshall, thank you. Thank you very much for that. Thank you very much for that. This was truly an honor. I have adopted that community, and I think the world of all of them down there. And they do a great job. Their centennial celebration was wonderful. But more importantly, they're really engaged in taking care of their own, taking care of their community, taking care of their seniors. They do a wonderful job of their Rainbow Bend community down there, and this truly is an honor. This is one of the nicest things that have ever happened to me, and thank you very much for sharing this, Mark. Very much.
That's all I have today. So with this, we're going to move on to item number 16. This is discussion and possible action. Approval and acceptance of the Department of Homeland Security Grant Award administered through the State of Nevada Division of Emergency Management in the amount of $58,386.55 for upgrades to the computer-aided dispatch system at the Story County Communication Center and authorization for Sherry Nevin and or Joe Curtis to sign all associated grant documentation. Ms. Nevin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sherry Nevin for the record. As Pat made mention to earlier, we did receive a state homeland security grant. We applied for this grant in May of 2016. It was deobligated state homeland security grant funds. So basically they had a pot of money from other jurisdictions that they weren't able to spend. So we went ahead and said, yeah, we have a project, let's apply for it. So we applied, and on June 16th, Dave Ballard and Joe Curtis presented the project to the State Homeland Security Finance Committee. They said, we like your project, but we don't have enough money to go around. You'll be ranked number one if more money becomes available. So we kind of wrote it off at that time, thinking we're not going to get anything. On July 6th, we received notification that additional grant funds had become available, and since our project was ranked number one, the money was ours. So we'll be getting $58,386.55. That does come with a very small match to complete the project in the amount of $13,834.45. And I have Dave here today, and he'll give you a little bit of an overview on exactly what this money is going to buy the county.
Great, thank you. I'm going to have you handle the next item.
Yes, yeah.
Hello, Dave Ballard for the record. This grant, first of all, this whole project is huge. It's way bigger than I thought it could possibly be. It's pretty incredible. You're looking at this thing is going to pay to have people come in and set this up. We're looking at having technical support here, advisors, trainers. We're looking at about 20 days of training through the dispatch. Pretty much the whole month of October is going to be training on this thing. It's a huge project. What it does for us is it basically ties our CAD system into the EMD, which is Emergency Medical Dispatching, and Emergency Police Dispatching. It ties it into there. When we get a call now, especially for a medical, we're using a run car, flip car type system, a chart, and the dispatchers will answer the phone. They'll pick up the card basically on what somebody says is going on, and they use these things to give pre-arrival instructions until we can get help there to them. It's pretty valuable. We recently used it in a situation down on I-80 where we got a 911 call of a woman in labor. And her sister was driving. Her sister said, I'm not stopping. If I stop, this kid's going to be born right now. Unless you have an ambulance on the freeway, I'm going to keep going. We tried to talk her into going to Northern Nevada. She's like, I don't know where that is. The husband or the dad is at Renown, and that's where we're going. And they kept going. We couldn't get her to stop. They finally delivered the baby right there on Mill and Kitsky there. They pulled over in the little Chinese restaurant there, and they delivered the baby waiting for Remsa. As you're listening to the tape, you can hear the sirens of Remsa coming. You can hear a trooper who finally walked up and saw what was going on, and I could see hightailed out of there. But the two dispatchers were flipping cards, and they delivered this baby. So it's pretty incredible. The system itself, now when we do this automated, what's good about this is it's going to allow us to get better at these things. We have a QA, a quality assurance, built into it, where we're going to be able to evaluate every single call we get. We're going to be able to go through it and make adjustments. If there's a problem, we're going to find it early on, and we're going to be able to correct it. It's pretty amazing. Most of the larger dispatch centers in the country are using it. And where it's going to be really beneficial is the emergency police dispatching. That's something that's fairly new to us, but it gives us a national standard. It's a protocol that's reviewed by a team somewhere that goes through stuff. Every time something happens different, I mean, you watch the news every day, there's something different, society's changing. You're getting these mass shootings. You're getting, you know, ambushes on officers. You're getting all this stuff. Right now, as it stands, as we get these things, it's kind of up to us to try to review what's going on, try to research it, and try to train ourselves to stay put with it, to keep people safe. This will do it for you automatically. I can promise you there's already a team in place right now reviewing all the stuff that happened in Orlando, reviewing what happened in Dallas and what happened last week in Louisiana. They're putting together, they're changing protocols, and they're putting that stuff out. So basically what will happen with this system now is we get a call of a shooter or whatever it is. It's going to, a prowler, it doesn't matter what the call is. It's going to have a national set of questions that are standardized and used whether you're in Miami, New York, San Francisco, L.A., wherever you are. It's going to be the same exact questions. You're going to ask those questions to the caller. You're going to get all that information. That information is getting put into the incident report, and it's getting pushed out to the officers out on the street. It's huge. It lifts liability off of us. All around, I just can't express. I'm in awe of this whole project going on. We went down and asked for it. They basically said, yeah, we like it, like Sherry said, but, you know, the money we got here is going to Clark County. If we get some money, we'll give you a call. And we just kind of blew it off as that. And then they called us and said, it's yours. You have to have it spent right away. You have to have it, you know, spent by the end of August. Well, anybody who knows me knows I don't have any problem spending money. So we're going to get that spent, and then after it's gone, they said we have 90 days from there to have this program fully up and running. So we're jumping in on this and hope to have this thing fully implemented and going by October 26th. So there's going to be a lot of training going. We're waiting until after September. They're going to come up and train us. They're going to do a ton of stuff with this thing. Once we get it going, they're going to work with us on the quality assurance to make sure we're meeting these standards. If we keep going with the way we're going with it right now, we should probably be able to be nationally accredited, and that'll be really big for the county. I think that's pretty much the big departments are there. So it's, I said, it's a step in a big direction. I don't even know what to say on it. I'm kind of speechless that they even gave us the opportunity to do this.
Are any of our neighboring jurisdictions using this system yet?
Yeah, I know Douglas County uses it. I'm sure, I think Washoe County uses it fully. Reno PD probably uses it. Carson probably uses it. We all use part of it, but, you know, not all of it. So, I mean, and there's another part of this that I haven't even bothered to get into yet, and that's the fire side of it. And I figure we might as well try to get these ones going first, and then maybe we'll look at that one later on. Most of the departments do it that way. They'll bring one on, then they'll bring another, and then the third. But, yeah, as far as, like I said, liability-wise is huge. If we use this thing as it's set up and we do everything as we're supposed to, and if something happens and we still get sued, the county is defended and we're protected by this priority dispatch. They send their legal teams in and they defend you on it. They, you know, they research it. They say, no, you follow protocol, and you know, you got their legal teams in there. It's a big thing. Like I said, it's the biggest thing that I've probably accomplished since I've been here. So I'm pretty excited and pretty proud of it.
It's the only thing.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's, I guess, the project.
That's great.
Any questions?
Yeah. I think it's great.
Yeah, sure.
A couple things. One is I want to thank the sheriff and also Chief Hames. They have been exceptionally supportive of Dave and Sherry in this process in terms of saying, you guys give us national standards, and we will work with those and make those work because they are the national standards. So it's been great teamwork. And I do want to circle back on that great teamwork, particularly with the two people that are standing right up here. I mentioned earlier how critically important compliance is when you have a grant. And if I understand this right, this probably is the shortest time frame for the one of the bigger projects that we've had to get this thing accomplished within, say yes and 90 days later, you better be done. But that, again, will play very, very favorably on the granting agencies when they take a look at the next pot of money. I mean, Sherry's actually had people come to them where we don't even have a grant in mind and say, we've got an extra $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000. Do you have a project you'd like? And we cobble one together. But it takes a team leader like Dave, a department director, to be able to say, we can make this happen. The hours that the employees or the dispatchers have to get trained is intimidating to me. I mean, 4 days each?
I think your basic dispatcher, you know, just the ones that aren't doing the quality assurance are going to get 6 days of training. And then the ones that are doing the quality assurance are going to actually get 9 days of training. And then after they're trained, this priority dispatch will send the instructor back in, and they're going to spend another 24 hours in the dispatch center. They're going to spend half their time with the day shift, the other half with the graveyard on two different days, just going through scenarios and practice and making sure we fully understand the thing.
And keep in mind, again, when we do this and we pull it off, we'll look very good the next time around. So I thank you guys and everybody, but again, you guys specifically for thinking of this, making it happen, and making it happen really a tremendous savings to the county. So
your staff be trained to the level where they can turn around and retrain new hires?
Yeah, actually, that's how it works on this. I was afraid of that at first. I was afraid that once you got certified, if you weren't certified, you couldn't work, and that kind of scared me. But no, this is set up to where they train people how to use this, and it's kind of simple. Basically, what you're doing is you're just asking the questions. You're answering the phone. You're typing in the name. Once you type in the nature of the call, if it's a prowler, boom, you'll ask the information, and it won't allow you to go on until you answer that question you're supposed to. So it's pretty seamless. So anybody should be able to walk in there. Once they have a little hands-on experience with the computer, they should be able to use this thing. So we'll be able to train people better on that, which is also going to be nice, is because now we've got a standard on how we're training people on how to answer phones. It's hard to do that. It changes all the time. A lot of it depends on the dispatcher. One dispatcher will train someone one way, and the other one will train someone the other way. This has taken that away. It's all done the same. And then once they're trained on this, we have to send them to another class later on to get their certification. Poolpack has been great for us to use. They've picked up the bill for us quite a bit on a lot of these trainings for the EMD. They've also paid for us to host them here, where we can actually pick a building and we can host it. We put out the dates and have people from other agencies come to us, and we can train them here. They've been good. So that's one of the things we'll be able to do with this. We'll be able to train how to use it, and then get them certified elsewhere, or certify them in-house, depending on how that works.
Any other questions? Anyone in public comment on this item? Hearing none, I'm looking for a motion for the approval and acceptance of this grant.
I'll move to approve and accept a Department of Homeland Security grant award administered through the State of Nevada Division of Emergency Management, and in the amount of $58,386.55 for upgrades to the computer-aided dispatch system at the Story County Communications Center, and authorization for Sherry Nevin and or Joe Curtis to sign all associated grant documentation.
That's great. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded to go ahead and the approval and acceptance of this grant in the amount of $58,386.55. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 17. Number 17 is an item that I have a pecuniary interest in this property. And so at this time, I'm going to turn the meeting over to Vice Chairman Gilman, and I'm going to recuse myself from any comments and abstain from any voting. And I'll just join the audience until we get through this item.
Item 17, discussion and possible action. It's the approval of accounts payable check number 85985, dated 06/30/16, for $4,500 to the Bucket of Blood Saloon.
Mr. Acting Chairman, Vice Chairman, if I may,
this is our quarterly contractual obligation for the paved parking lot over here, and I believe under a revision to that contract, also the ability to use portions of the dirt lot that are also owned by the Bucket. This is our first payment for the new fiscal quarter. Nothing has changed. We are continuing to proceed, albeit rather slowly, with the final closure on the purchase of this and the ability to move forward with the actual parking lot project. A lot of it has to do with some pending surveys and title reports and everything that we're hung up on a little bit. But through the DA's office and Keith and Ann, we're working through that. But we will still have another one or two or three of these payments over the course of the next 6 months or so.
Yes, sir. We've dealt with the issue before. Thank you for that presentation. At this point, call for any public comment.
Thanks, Vice Chair Gilman. For the record, Mark Joseph Phillips, a Virginia City resident, speaking to item number 17. In a search at the Secretary of State's office yesterday, I pulled Marshall McBride's financial disclosure statement. It is a candidate for a re-election as a county commissioner under Section 3, real property, lists specific location and particular use of all real estate other than your personal residence, in which you are a which you have legal or beneficial interest. The fair market value is $2,500 or more, which is located in this state. Commissioner McBride, you wrote none. You know, you can recuse yourself because you have pecuniary interest, yet in your financial disclosure statement, I see no real property listed. And I know between bucket of blood and family trust, there's a lot of it. So I'm disappointed.
Any comment, D.A. Langer?
No. I'll look into the issue on how property is held. I'll check into this.
Thank you.
I don't want to make some off-the-cuff statement without being able to back it up legally.
Any other public testimony or questions? So at this point, I'll call for a motion of approval of the accounts payable check number 85985, dated 6/30/2016, for $4,500 to the Bucket of Blood Saloon.
I'll make a motion to approve the accounts payable check number 85985, dated 6th of July 30th of 2016. Yes, June. Or was that June? Mm-hmm. Correct myself. Date of June 30th, 2016, for the amount of $4,500 to the Bucket of Blood Saloon.
I'll second your motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
Check's not going to Marshall, it's going to the bucket. So.
Right.
Thank you, Vice Chairman Gillen. Moving along now to item number 18. This is discussion and possible action approval of ballot language for Story County ballot. Question 16-001. Shall the Story County Board of Commissioners enact an ordinance to impose for the period beginning on January the 1st, 2017 and ending on December 31st, 2026? Annual increases in taxes on certain motor vehicle fuels based on construction inflation not to exceed 7.8% annually for the purpose of funding repairs and maintenance of roads and projects that will reduce traffic congestion and enhance public safety in Story County, to be placed on the 2016 general election ballot.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to start off, but I'm also going to ask, as we wade into some specific information on fuel tax indexing, fuel taxes in general. That's why I've asked our consultant, Tom Gransberry. So, Tom, if you join us and maybe just grab a seat handy up here. I'll start out. In your packet, I provided you with actually two attachments. It's important probably to start with the last one, the one titled NACO Recommended Language. The Nevada Association of Counties provided some very good, solid draft information, a template, if you will, with the clear instructions to the local governments that said, A, you have to put something on the ballot, the county clerks do. B, if you put it on, you may want to follow this from a consistency standpoint, so people, you know, when they're talking to voters in Lyon County or Carson City or wherever it may be, you know, there's some similarities, but at the same time, they gave us freedom to adapt as the specific circumstances might better explain to the voters of this what it may mean. So I'm going to give you my general overview of this as I understand it, with one outstanding issue that we know we have right now. But when the day is done, we need to get this done before the end of July, I believe. And this is our recommendation to go forward. So AB 191 of the 2015 legislative session provided for a statewide ballot question of should there be fuel tax indexing. And this would apply essentially, as I understand it, to every county with the exception of Washoe County. Washoe County currently has indexing. To be really blunt, that's one of the reasons why the prices of gas are oftentimes much higher in there, as they're allowed to index. They index for a number of things to support their roads and their RTC. And I'm going to come back to that concept in just a minute. In order for this to be successful, it has to pass in a statewide majority, and then counties where this question might pass can initiate fuel tax indexing. What's that mean? In some respects, I would say it's going to mean that it's going to be a tough road to hoe because historically tax increase questions on ballots don't fare well. Am I optimistic? I'm hopeful, I guess would be the best way to say this. But I'm hopeful because I want to provide some assurances primarily to the general public, but also to this commission and future commissions so long as I'm here, that we have no intent or desire to mimic Washoe County in terms of putting in massive tax rates. And I say that because you can actually, in certain entities and jurisdictions, they're putting a lower delimiter in there than the 7.8%. I believe we talked, Carson may be looking at a 3. There are other jurisdictions. At the moment, should this pass on a statewide majority basis, and should it pass in Story County, it would be our intent to primarily focus more on diesel fuel than gasoline fuel. Gasoline fuel, we already receive some beneficial factors from the fuel tax that happens. Diesel, we receive zip. And we verified that a number of times through a number of areas. We don't want to monkey with or raise dramatically any more than we, other than an indexing might start us out with, we don't want to dramatically increase the cost of gasoline sales, either for the VC station or the one now existing truck stop and try, and potentially at least one more that's almost imminent, and others. Where we get nothing is in diesel fuel tax. And those are the ones where we want to begin to introduce. If you look at it, the truck stop, the Golden Gate Petroleum truck stop out at Tribe, has a massive amount of cars, but also a massive amount of large trucks fueling up, in large case because of the cost difference between us and Washoe County. We don't want to match Washoe County. We would have no intent to that. But even if we put in, and Tom will run a few numbers here for you, but if we put in a penny or 2 cents or something like that, those fuel consumptions will generate an awful lot of money to go specifically toward roads. Now, the reason why I'm a proponent of this is, if you think about it, it's been the commission's desire all along to reduce government spending, to reduce tax costs. What are one of the big users in the general fund account? Roads. We transfuse either $300,000 or $500,000 a year annually into roads because we don't generate enough in fuel tax to support this. So we're hopeful, and when you look at roads, you can look in any of our communities. We're going to be, and I know Lance is going to announce this yet again at Saturday at the 1 acre meeting, but we are going to honor our commitment to Cape Seal the private portion of Cartwright. It's being included in a bid package being developed right now. So you look at even that road, but you look at the rest of our roads, both in Virginia City, Mark Twain, and throughout the remainder of our communities that are public roads, they're hurt, you know. But equally as important is the massive amount of traffic on our roads out in Tri, and those are typically your bigger rigs. You know, yeah, you got a lot of employees, 4,500 by my count, 10 million by Lance's. We're hopeful. It's the big rigs that really wear down these roads and break them down. They're all built to great standards. They were designed that way. They were dedicated that way to us. But even the best of roads needs tender loving care and maintenance. So we're hopeful with very little diesel sales originating from the Virginia City gas station. The impact would not be major, and yet the ability to capture an additional revenue source, primarily from out-of-county people, quite frankly, particularly once USA Parkway is done, will go a long, long way toward that. It also, more than likely, I want to make everybody aware, we probably will be able to identify pretty precisely how much in fuel tax we're generating out in Tri, so it's anticipated that those revenues will also become a factor in our developer payback under the 35% rule. I want to tell you, I think that's great news because we can get out of debt faster we can, you know, clear our slate. So we're not going to do it in a year, we're not going to do it in 5 years, but this helps and definitely goes towards the road repairs, the 65-cent portion. So with that said, I will warn the commission that there are still a few questions we have to work with the folks at Tri, primarily Bob Sater and Chris, as to making sure we follow both the spirit and the contractual requirements of our developer agreement, because this would be a new tax, a new fee. But my general discussions with Tri as recently as yesterday afternoon were such that the good outweighs the negative in many cases. And we would never, in my opinion, and should never, in my opinion, abuse this to any high levels. We should stay low. We should give you a couple of forecast numbers that you can look at. If you look at the enabling language, again, you take the NACO language, then you take the staff recommended modified language. You know, you guys can set that rate. You currently have a max rate of 7.8%. I don't know if our initial tax rate will be a 1% or a 2% or whatever. But whatever it is, then the indexing would then begin to, you know, annually adjust almost like a cost of living increase, if you will, which typically follows things like oil's up, so we're paying higher prices, labor's up, so we're paying higher staff charges for road repairs, those types of things. So with that said, I would ask Tom to probably totally confuse us all on the merits of indexing and probably debunk 50% of what I just said.
For the record, Tom Gransberry. First off, I'd like to thank the Board of County Commissioners for letting me present this information. Pat nailed it, pretty much. What I'd like to get into is about five or six bullet points that I took out of a report from NACO and also DMV. They put out a packet, I believe Pat sent it to me in May. I reviewed it and just reviewed it again last week, and this discussion came back up again. What I'd like to touch on first, if the ballot language, the ballot question fails, nothing will change. Right now, the county receives 10.65 cents for every gallon sold in Story County. That will not change. On
gas.
Yes, that's on gas, exactly. That's something to remember. Pat was correct. The tax on diesel, as of today, right now, it goes to the state highway fund, and it goes to the federal government for their federal highway program. So no diesel tax revenue comes to the local governments. So if the ballot question does pass, the two real high points I think that you need to consider is that all indexing revenue will be under the local government's, the county's control. They will work in conjunction with DMV, but I think you'll have a lot of input on the projects that you would like to see completed with this new revenue. And then the second point that Pat touched on is the indexing revenue off of the diesel will come to the local government, will come to the county. And, that, and that's really the high point. A year ago, I was discussing some of this stuff with Hugh, and he made it a point to say, you know what, if we could get the tax or some kind of tax on the diesel that's being sold out there, try, it would be a real good revenue source. In addition, the indexing will also include the federal tax on gas, federal tax on propane, and the federal tax on methane fuels. So again, that indexing factor, if the ballot question is approved, you will see some additional revenue coming from those smaller fuel sales, if you will. All right. The fourth thing I'd like to touch on here is DMV did some projections. If the ballot question is passed, it will last for 10 years. So with their projections, they used a very conservative 1% growth in gallons sold for 10 years, and then they projected that over those 10 years, Story County could see about $9.3 million in revenue. What I'd like to point out is tracking the fiscal year 16 gallons, as we stand now, and I don't have the last 2 months, I have 10 months of data. That's showing that the gallons have increased about 12%. So if 1% over 10 years is going to give us 9.3, if we realize something greater than 1 and we can see something like double digits over several years, there's going to be a real increase in that revenue. And again, it'll be local revenue, and you guys will have control of that on the projects you want to have completed. The one thing AB 191 stated, and this is important, is that if the ballot language is passed, the county could take debt out with this new indexing revenue as a source of paying off that debt. But if you go that route, there's a very important thing that has to be considered here. The rate that you establish, again, this, you know, could be the point, excuse me, as high as 7.8% or something less that you guys approve. If you take debt out, you're going to have to keep that rate for 5 years. If you don't take debt out, it's my understanding with the law is you can change that indexing factor to a different factor each and every year. So it's flexible, if you will. You know, if you saw a huge increase in your gallons sold and you wanted to keep that tax down, you could lower it to something very minute and still generate revenue. So you're going to have two things there, the ability to adjust the factor and then the ability to look at the increase in gallons. And I think that would be beneficial each and every year. Then the last thing I'd like to touch on, and just kind of give you a perspective, you know, you see, well, if you could increase the indexing factor to 7.8, well, what would this mean to a gallon of gas? So right now on gas, this is gas only, with the county tax, the state tax, and the federal tax, we're looking at about 53.2 cents on a gallon of gas. So if you were to increase that to the maximum of 7.8%, the increase would be 4.1 pennies that you would be increasing that. So that kind of gives you an idea. You know, the 7.8% sounds a lot, But when we're looking at only, you know, 53.2 cents, the increase isn't going to be terribly high. So that's all I'd like, that's all I have really to pass on
to you. So it's only based on the, it's 7.8% of the taxes are being collected, not on the dollar value of the gasoline being sold.
No, it is, it's an increase on the taxes.
Gotcha. And that.
Again, you know, real quick, if we're looking at 53.2 cents, 10% would be increased 5.3. So again, it's something less than 5 cents. Okay. And again, you have the ability to change that indexing factor each and every year for the 10 years.
May I?
I think Lance wanted to weigh in.
Just right quick, I have a pecuniary interest out of TRI, and I'm sure there'll be some deliberations perhaps with Bob Sater. So out of abundance of caution, I'm going to recuse myself from discussions or this vote, and I'll join the audience for the balance of it.
Good.
Can I back up to one of the things you brought up, Tom, was that, did you say the tax in Story County is 10.6 cents per gallon?
Yes.
I thought it was 4 cents per gallon. Where did I...
Mr. Chairman, I'm combining... there's, I think, 4 different levies. That what you're talking about is the county option. That right now you levy 4 cents, and that could increase to 9 cents. And I believe if this question is approved, you will automatically go to the 9. Okay?
Okay.
In past years, and Pat and I and you have talked about this, the commissioners had the ability to increase that. They could have taken it from 4 to 9 or somewhere in between. When I was with taxation 1 year, Elko County increased it to 6.5 cents. So that's one levy. Then you also have a penny levy that goes to the county. In other counties where they have cities, they share that 1 cent. Then there is what they call the 1.75, and then there's also the 3.25. And this is all included. I don't know if you've got the packet from NACO. They show all those different levies. So when I spoke of 10.65, I was combining all of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what I've had, something I pulled off of Department of Taxation website at some point. So that's where I came up with the...
And you're very, you know, they talk about that 4 to 9 cent as the county option. But again, there's other levies that you receive.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pat?
Yeah, I have one question, and then I also have some things to circle back on and make comments on. Tommy mentioned propane. And
yes.
Obviously, you know, our focus, our interest is on diesel tax. Do you happen to know what our flexibility is in either not choosing or lowering indexing to a net sum zero practically on propane? I can tell you propane for us, in my opinion alone, not the commission's necessarily, a lot of poor people are forced to have propane in this county. Very few have the luxury of high pressurized natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, again, if staff were to recommend down the road what we can and can't do should this pass, we'd want to know what all of our options are in these various areas. For instance, again, gasoline as well, but I don't want to muddy the waters. But as far as propane specifically, it would be my intent, at least, to exercise as much judicious, conservative approach to it as we possibly can to minimize impact.
Let me weigh in on that a little bit, too. Currently, residential customers don't pay a tax on propane, and only business customers do.
Okay.
You know, I will ask some questions, and I'm wondering if it's specific as propane for use in motor vehicles.
Yeah, and you would think so with this.
I'm thinking that's the safety net.
Okay.
That it is strictly on again, because this indexing is from motor vehicle fuels.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. And we have a lot of things to do. You know, we need to get, you know, the tri people together, probably with Lee Gibson with the RTC, that's an expert in indexing, and others. And I'll defer to Commissioner McGuffey and then continue on.
Okay. So this is a question I asked at NACO. I'm on the board there.
Okay.
And some of the smaller counties, on their ballot question, they're sticking to a 3-cent cap and to try to get it to go through the problem. One thing that was very unclear was, will you be able to pick and choose the fuel? Like, let's say we just want to do diesel.
You know, last week, Pat and I had this discussion through emails, and I contacted Carmen Shipman at DMV, and she told me that you will not be able to have an indexing factor for diesel and a different one for gas. But I'm going to maybe research that a little bit more and try to get something in writing from them. But, again, they said the index factor you choose, that's going to be across the board, gas, diesel, and these other minor fuels.
And I do want to come back to the 3%, 7.8%, because I think, in my humble opinion, that might be your only real decision today. Yeah. You know, is we've got to go with some ballot language. This is probably as good as it's going to get close. But the level of annual increase, I think, is something that deserves specific discussion. So just from a staff comment, I would say, you know, Tom's mentioned you'd have to sustain a rate that you established if you incurred debt, if you bonded against basically future revenues. We would have no intent of doing that. We pretty much pay as you go with this stuff. Yeah. So there would be no intent to utilize debt. His mention of, you know, DMV's conservative estimates of $9+ million using a 1% growth factor versus our 12, you know, if we could sustain double digits. Again, I can't name names. They used to have a sign up on the corner of Electric Avenue and State Route 439 or USA Parkway, but we can anticipate a very large, very West Coast regionally competitive gas station that you may see all over, including when you travel to the bottom of Geiger Grade. They're going to locate there. It's just a question of when, probably as the highway gets closer or something like that. That's a game changer. Those types of stations, and by the way, it won't be like what you see at the bottom of Geiger Grade. It'll be that plus a big truck stop.
Well, it'll be a big truck stop, and most of those trucks are going to be interstate trucks.
You got it.
So it's not like the locals are going to be paying the taxes.
You got it.
It's going to be the truckers and out-of-state companies.
About the only one that would have to participate, can't talk. He's over in the corner because he buys his gas out there.
Plus the fact is that everyone else is collecting a diesel tax, except Story County. So this is our only avenue of collecting a diesel tax is through legislation.
And this money stays in Story County.
Right. Well, let's talk about that in a moment. In fact, we can talk about it right now.
Okay.
And I'm going to be very careful in these comments because I don't want to put words in somebody's mouth like NDOT's that I've heard from others, but not necessarily NDOT. These monies will go to multiple places when we index, as I understand it. I mean, NDOT is going to have some revenues that they can then apply to projects in Story County. And we can assume with a fairly good comfort level that it's probably going to be NDOT's intent to really help those local governments that enacted and passed fuel tax indexing by devoting those monies back. And then keep in mind, it's not just those monies. Well, they can't use Washoe County's index monies, they can use other tax monies from otherwise to look at. So I don't want to say NDOT will extort us in any way. I just kind of want to say that I think it would be in our best interest on projects including State Route 341, State Route 342, State Route 439. You know, I think it would definitely be a beneficial factor for us should we pass indexing in the eyes of the Department of Transportation. And lastly, and you know, I developed this kind of, you know, last seventh inning, ninth inning, whatever, crunch. I would probably tell you, looking at it with fresh eyes again today and listening to some of the background that you're giving me with NACO, starting with a 3% cap versus a 7.8. 7.8% is going to be a scary, intimidating number for the voters of the county.
Exactly.
and you'd have to explain the living daylights out of it. And while Tom has, we can't advocate necessarily and do that. We just hopefully want it to pass. I mean, we can get advocacy groups out there, but at the same time, 7.8 is a big number no matter how you slice it. Even if it only amounts to 4 cents.
When you see that, it is.
You know, so I would probably be a proponent of suggesting that you, while you deliberate this today, you consider a lower number. 3% is better than nothing, you know, to be honest with you. And if I wasn't aware, quite frankly, of all that good conversation at NACO. I was aware of some of it because you and I have talked. But I'd be totally receptive to cranking that number down to 3% throughout everything in the ballot language and the argument and everything as a method to hopefully better sell it to the voters of the county.
So we're not bound by the 7.8% for the language? No. Doesn't that language have to go statewide?
No, it's a not-to-exceed cap.
Right.
So you could lower your cap, so you're sending a message to the voters that says, well, we not only would never consider taking it above 7.8, we'll never take it above 3. So it's kind of just making the ballot language, I think, a little less onerous.
Patton, I'd just like to point out there on that, the Carson City ballot, was that 3% or 3 cents, not to exceed 3 cents?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was 3%.
3%, okay.
You know, but again, I mean, whether it's Carson or not, I mean, our competition is primarily Washoe County.
Yeah.
And Reno Sparks, out of the industrial park. That's where we don't get gallon counts from either one because it's a, you know, private enterprise, but we know where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. But I would almost encourage you, if I could, to modify my recommendation of 7.8% in the language down to 3.0. Again, to be consistent with other rural counties. I respect their positions and their logic on it.
And the beauty of this is that this is up to the voters. We've only been empowered to put it on the ballot and ask if the voters would like to go do this. And of course, then you'll see more money dedicated to your county roads. And,
you know, then what?
Do we know what other counties are going to be put in on theirs in their language?
Mr. Chairman, I could make some calls. I've got some real good contacts. Again, we've got Carson Cities, but I could look at Lyon and Douglas and see what they're proposing.
Yeah, I'd like to. Should be consistent with them, I think.
Well, and again, we really have to make a decision today. This is our
last. Yeah, we're at the 11th hour.
Today.
Yeah, we don't have the luxury of that. And the best I can go with is to tell you, as I look at 7.8%, I look at an intimidating number that's going to be difficult for a number of people, because we know how the elections work. You know, people, particularly on ballot questions, people don't always ask questions. People aren't out there providing good information. I think a 3% number is a whole lot more palatable, potentially, than not. We can certainly still explain. You don't even have to go to 3. You can go to 1. You can go to 0.5. You know, you can go to pretty much anything you want. And as Tom said, as long as we don't incur debt, you can adjust it in a given year, should you choose to, if it passes. But I think putting a lower cap on it overall is a good thing.
Mr. Gransberry, if we say, as an example, if we were to put a 3% cap on it, but the street and highway construction inflation rate for a given year is 1.5%, it has to stay. You'd have to be at 1.5%, right? You couldn't go to 3%.
Well, it's my understanding that, and I checked the producer price index is what they're going to be looking at DMV. Has gone down. I think in 14, I sent Pat this information. It was like 6.something%, and I think now for fiscal year 17, they're showing something at 3.something%. So it's been dropping because inflation has been low. So it's my understanding you could go with something lower than the PPI. But that is a good question. Could you go with something higher if the PPI is lower?
Right. Because there are a lot of inflationary indexes which cover the whole gamut of the whole economy. So right here they're talking about highway construction, so that's going to be its own line item, right, for inflation.
Yes. Now, is that part of the bill?
I believe it is.
Okay, yeah, because I think the bill was specific on what producer price index that they would be looking at. I know when they look at the CPI, they'll look at the western state. You know, they do those numbers for different geographic areas. So I would be thinking they would be looking at some kind of western state PPI.
You can only go up 3. If it goes up 2%.
Okay. Okay.
I believe with Pat there's established something at like at 3%. Again, you're telling the voters there that you do want some new revenue, but you're willing to lower it than what the legislation allows, and that you know, the proponents need to talk about the potential of the diesel and gas sales out at Tri are, you know, very high.
And that's why the language has been adjusted to kind of hopefully provide that. And again, I think, you know, this is, again, you know, and Commissioner Chairman McBride, you go to the four county legislative coalitions where, you know, we get our annual unfunded mandates handed down to us from some of the state agencies. And while, you know, Lyon County and Carson and Douglas are getting hit with 100,000, 500,000, whatever it is, we get hit with 3,000. And how many times we've heard everybody wants to be Story County. And I would tell you this would yet again be that. I wouldn't want to be Lyon County in this case, and probably Carson City, where if you really look at the potential for additional gas sales, yeah, the populations are going to grow. Mike Kazmierski told us that. But they're not going to get a whole lot of new gas stations. I guarantee you, in addition to the one that's at the bottom of the hill, there'll be others as that highway develops out. You may have a massive truck stop area and 600 acres that's just about 3 miles to the west there on Waltham Way. You know, so and again, one of the reasons is that we would not want to set tax rates that would be so high as to not make it worth the trip from
Washington. I kind of just wish that we had like spreadsheets that would go ahead and show us what the potential tax collection would be for how many gallons that are sold as that index is up, you know, whatever it is, 1% a year or whatever, and then based on whatever the inflationary rate would increase to. I mean, we're going to be setting an arbitrary rate, shooting in the dark, because we don't have any idea how much.
You're setting an arbitrary cap. That's all you're doing. You're setting an arbitrary cap. You're not setting the rate at this stage of the game. You're it cannot exceed 3.
But we still don't even know how much revenue that's going to generate, right?
I'll just put this out there. If you could postpone it and have a special meeting, I certainly could run some numbers.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure that we're not the only county that's reviewing this.
I got to tell you, this has been out on my radar only because I started tracking some of the gallons out there, you know, at county level. I can't say this is at Tri. Or I can, because what produces the gallons for Story is the Golden Gate Petroleum, and I believe they're the sole provider or one of the major providers of fuel out of Tri. So this was kind of on my radar, but there's so much going on these days that you know, we could have gotten into it a lot deeper. I guess I should say, if your wish to postpone it, and I'm just putting it out there, I certainly could run some numbers and get it back to you.
Marcia, we'd have to have a special meeting at the end.
And I will tell you that you can try to get a special meeting on. We can try to answer some of these questions before you make a decision. But there are no definitive answers often on this. I mean, this is if you talk to 6 different people, you're going to get 8 different opinions.
Well, I think we're at a good starting point because We have one major truck stop in the park now. We know we're going to get another one, and there's always the possibility of additional after that. We know we have one hotel coming, and maybe five. As things grow. So I'm thinking that if we did start it, what we would maybe feel is a relatively reasonable cap to start with. Might be a good start, because if this legislation passes in November, it might be something that has to get corrected in the next legislature in 2017, when you have 17 counties that say this doesn't work for everybody like this. You might have to go back and massage it, the legislation, and make it better.
So staff's recommendation, and again, just on a quick read, if you look at the staff recommended language that's been adapted from NACO, in the actual ballot question, we would alter 7.8% to 3.0%. And then I see two other tangible changes, both being in the explanation. About halfway through the explanation, where you see 7.8% annually, that would change to 3.0%. And then in the next sentence down, you see would most likely establish a substantially lower rate. When you're setting a cap at 3, it's going to be difficult to probably go substantially lower than that. So I would just say most likely establish a lower rate.
So this basically establishes an ordinance to where we would have a 3.0% cap. And, of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that we need to raise the rate annually at 3% either. We don't have to raise it at all. As long as we have the ordinance in place.
You're correct,
Commissioner. And I think it's tight. I think it's tied to the inflation index too. So if the inflation index came in lower, you couldn't exceed what the inflation index was.
And that's a critical thing that I think, again, we've got to keep our eye on, is that, you know, you guys can establish a cap. The inflationary index simply says if it's 2%, then that's what it's going to be, because you're under your cap. If it's 8%, then it's going to be whatever you establish your cap at. Yeah. So you're putting a governor on there that basically says, you know, the inflation rate is going to be whatever it is, right, but we won't go up by more than X amount.
Right, correct.
How about public comment on this? Ms. Bard, I knew you might have something to say on this.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. Just a couple things. Pat, you had mentioned early on that there were two attachments in the packet, and there's only one in the public packet, so I don't...
Are there two pages to say staff recommended language adapted by NACO and NACO recommended language?
No.
I apologize. No,
just saying. So
I can provide.
Appreciate having that. You also made another comment that said... we don't want that Washo index is that we don't want to do that. The language in this says indexing. So how is that different than what Washo does?
I may have misspoke, Nicole, and thank you for the question. We don't want to do it to the degree Washo does. If you look at Washo's factors in their fuel tax, and again, I'm not an expert in Washo County, but I can tell you, and Tom, I don't know if you know, you know, of our 53 cents, Washoe County's got to be substantially more for their RTC support, for their roads, for their indexing and whatnot. So Washoe has the ability to index regardless of whether this passes. They were given that in a subsequent legislative session 4 or 5, 6 years ago. But, you know, my point was we don't want to rise to Washoe County rate standards. We want to avoid that at all costs.
I believe, Tom Grant here for the record, I believe Washoe's
is tied to the PPI. Whatever that is, then that's what they use. I think the legislators wanted to give the county some flexibility for the company. That is why. And again, it's in NACO's ballot language. It says that the 7.8 is the max, and the county could decide to choose something lower. But and some flexibility.
And I guess, again, Nicole, if you take a look at the cost of a gallon of gasoline, you know, at the Maverick Station at the bottom of the hill, as opposed to the Maverick Station in Carson City, and perhaps even as opposed to the Maverick Station in Douglas County, I mean, I don't always compare them on any given day, you're going to see marked differences.
I bought my gas in Carson, I know. And it's 20, 30 cent difference.
Exactly, and that is because of the RTC.
Yeah.
You know, and they use it to support their roads, and they're able to because of prior legislation.
Okay.
So my point wasn't necessarily the methodology. My point was the adaptation of it.
Okay. The other thing is that you said that we would want to focus it on diesel versus gas, but then that was followed by another question that Jack asked that said, can we just do for diesel? And the answer was no. Whatever you do has to be...
I believe it. Again, I can try to get this in writing, but I'm sure what my conversation was is, you know, you couldn't have three different factors.
Yeah.
You've got to choose an index.
And again, my point may have been not well stated, and even I will admit to some level of confusion on this because of the differing opinions that you have out there. But the point still is, in my opinion, that while we do a lot of gas in the county, primarily through Golden Gate right now and soon to be through the other one, I'm sure, we do a huge amount of diesel out there that we get nothing from. So the beneficial factors that we would be expecting, assuming that Tom's information is correct from taxation or DMV or wherever it came from, DMV, the beneficial factors that we would want to model through the spreadsheets, through everything, would be based on diesel fuel sales, not gas fuel sales.
But is it true that in order for us to, because it makes sense to me, we get nothing from diesel, let's tax it and get that money. That's perfect. But does it mean that in order to get that money from diesel, we would have to say 3% increase on everything, which means 3% on gas, in order to get from floor zero to 3% on diesel?
And I know you don't like to operate this way, and I respect that. Let's assume that to be true, okay?
Okay.
That, you know, and again, we'll get clarification where we need clarification over time through NACO, through opinions, like Marcia said. But the answer would be then, that then becomes a factor as you model what that tax is going to be. Because again, and I'm not going to accuse you of misstating, you know, but how confusing it gets is if you set 3%, it's 3%. We're talking about a cap. And within that cap, you can adjust.
No, I understand that. But to get from zero to on diesel, so you'd go from zero and say 1% to a max of 3 per, you know, at any given time. But it would also increase gas.
Yes.
Whatever you do.
Let's assume yes.
That's basically it.
You brought up a good point, Nicole. So now we're already collecting some tax off gas.
Yeah.
Correct.
I don't know what that rate is. If this were to go through, and now we can raise the prices, let's say we raise fuel 3%. Is that going to be 3% on top of the rate we already have on gas, or does that gas start over again?
It would be 3% on top of the rate.
On top of it.
Yep.
On top of it.
Yes.
So the 10.6 is the floor at that point. If this legislation were to pass, 10.6 is the floor. And we,
if this passes, okay. And this is a very good matrix that you guys
combo
need to probably
they're
look
doing
at.
3 cents.
You're right. Here
so,
is and,
you know,
where I'm getting 10.65. That says...
guys, this sounds like we have to pass it to read
okay.
it.
Okay.
I mean, given that we're against the clock,
okay.
And I understand that. I totally understand that. But this is not feeling right, just having come out of the Obamacare thing.
Well, and I think we just got some information from Vanessa that indicates at least two counties, Humboldt and Mineral, would have taken a 3 cents versus 3% approach. So, you know, as much as I will tell you I don't know how many more answers we will have on July, whatever a special meeting is, you know, if you guys can please summarize your questions, you know, tell me what they are. Nicole, I would extend the same offer to you. You know, email them to me. I will be in Long Beach for a conference.
I mean, I don't want to spit on this. I'm
I respect that we need to have as much clarity in the answers as we can, because if we don't have them here, then we're not going to have them at the ballot booth, you know, in November. Right. So I would tell you we need, probably need to get a hold of the people at NACO. I don't know if Mary Walker can again chime in or not. But Tom, I'm going to leave the ball in your court. But if you guys would summarize your questions, send them to me expeditiously, I would appreciate it. And we'll try to get those answered, and we'll schedule a special meeting to get this done.
Okay. And then the last thing is, the way this reads is, it reminds me of the VNT ballot, where it said all money is collected in Story County stays in Story County. We know that didn't happen. This says in the language, again, in the copy I have, there may be another one that's out there, that, and it does stay in here, it does say that the money stays in Story County for projects here. So I would ask you to reread that, because you also made the statement that said, clarified it, that said, well, you know, the money, some of it's going to go back to the Department of Transport, whatever. If it's going to stay, all of it is going to stay in Story County, then we say that. If portion of it will stay in Story County, we need to say that.
Well, I will tell you, and I'd like to see what you're looking at versus what I'm looking at, but I would tell you that there was no adaptation of NACO's language, so NACO's research has, to the extent they can, confirmed that the monies that would be raised from the indexing would stay in Story County. Now, my understanding of it is that it's not under complete Story County control. Portions are going to go to the state. Portions are going to go to the feds. But they will be used for projects in the county where indexing happens.
So is 100% of the revenue generated from this going to go to projects in Story County?
That's what NACO tells us. Yes.
And NDOT will have access to a percentage of that money to use in Story County. And Story County, us, we have access to a portion
so
to do whatever.
If I raise $100, if it raises $100 in Story County, all of that stays in Story County. But Nevin may get $10 of that to do Cartwright. Department of Transportation, DOT, may get some portion of that $100 to do work in Story out in TRI. The different agencies will pull from that money to do projects in Story County.
That's correct.
That's what we're told. And that is also, if you harken back, I think, to the last meeting, well, again, they made it very clear they can't advocate. If Bill Hoffman from NDOT indicated that this is a very important ballot question for consideration, because it will provide monies for specific projects in counties that pass indexing.
And my last question slash statement is that when California instituted its lotto for the schools, they stopped funding the schools, or not stopped, but they decreased funding schools from other sources. So my next question, comment is this another mashing of that balloon to where by us increasing this tax in our county, that the state doesn't have to worry about providing that much more money to us from other sources now that we have established this as a greater source of revenue for ourselves? Just another unintended consequence question.
Yeah. And I mean, I would... Who knows with the state? I can tell you. I can tell you what our intent is, but staff's recommendation.
I know, but I would ask that that has to me, and that would be part of my thinking when looking at this in a potential, you know, scenario planning thing, as a, again, an unintended consequence. So if we get locked in, if we do this, and we do cap it at 3%, and if the state stop sending us other monies because we have, and we've trapped ourselves at 3%. Is that a trap? I mean, I agree with you that that 7.8% is daunting to a voter. I mean, I'd sit there and go, no. But
7.8% of 10.6 cents isn't very much money.
That's going to be hard to explain, and I think that's where, that's where, again, I think the Humboldt Mineral and now Carson City, thank you very much, Vanessa.
But it's a big percentage.
They are, they've taken a totally different approach that Tom and I are going to look at, Keith Loomis will take a look at. Should you continue this item, which is now staff's recommendation, they are, Carson City's is, will apply a percentage which will result in annual increases to motor vehicle fuel tax in an amount not to exceed in each year a total of 3 cents for every gallon sold.
And so that way then,
no matter what the percentage is, then I think we've limited it to a more definable amount, because keep in mind, and as Ann and I were trying to talk, gasoline prices fluctuate. The base price fluctuates. And if you tie it to a percentage, that's going to radically whipsaw this thing, as opposed to just saying 3 cents of every gallon that gets sold, diesel and fuel, or not to exceed 3 cents, you know, is going to go toward this fund. So we'll probably look at that approach, maybe scrap some NACO, work with Keith. Should you choose to continue this, which is now my third recommendation of the day on this.
We have to have this ironed out by when?
The last Friday of the month. So.
Which is?
We have like one or two open days, and that's it.
I got you.
We have either next Wednesday or Thursday.
Yep.
Thursday, that's it.
Yep.
Okay.
And Thursday
the calendar's full.
And Thursday we have Aqua Metals, so.
Right.
So
I would probably tell you tentatively we'll shoot for Wednesday.
How's the court calendar look?
I don't know if the district court doesn't. If we were conflicting, we could take the portal system downstairs.
I don't think there's anything in district court next week on Wednesday.
Justice court. And Nicole, I'd appreciate, again, your comments, but also any summary recommendations. If you, before you leave, I will make sure what you're looking at and what I'm looking at. I don't know why, but I'll get you that stuff and then we'll. So staff's recommendation is to continue this probably until Wednesday, June or July 27th. Can we just go ahead and shoot for 9 a.m.? Would that work for at least the two of you?
When?
9 a.m. on Wednesday the 27th.
Okay.
We get back from Mako late that afternoon before then.
Here?
Yes, sir.
Here?
Yes.
Any other comment on this before we move on? Okay, Jack, can I get a motion from you to continue this?
I'll make a motion to continue the ballot language, Story County ballot question 16.001. Shall Story County Board of Commissioners enact an ordinance to impose for the period beginning January 1st, 2017 and ending on December 31st, 2026, annual increases in the taxes on certain motor vehicle fuels based on construction inflation not to exceed 3.0% annually for the purpose of funding repairs and maintenance of roads and projects that will reduce traffic congestion and enhance public safety in Story County.
3%.
He's continuing. I think you're continuing, correct?
Yeah.
Commissioner Jeffrey?
Pardon?
You're continuing that.
Oh, yes. That's read as a continuance.
Okay.
Okay, so just 3%.
I don't think they can. I mean, I think it's clear where we're going to try to direct.
Okay.
So, maybe if we can just engage in some comments so I have some clarity. We would be continuing until July 27th at 9 a.m. here in the Story County District Courtroom. The clerk will post for a special meeting. And unless I hear differently from you, since this isn't an agendized action, staff through Tom Gransberry, please stick around, Mr. Gransberry. Staff through Tom Gransberry, and with your summary inputs and the public's summary comments, we'll back up three steps and try to take another approach at this. More than likely using a cent per gallon approach as opposed to a percent per gallon approach. We still may not have all the answers, but at least we will have some clarity.
Yeah.
Okay. Our recommendation.
So we have a motion on the floor. Continue this item, special meeting, July the 27th, 9 a.m. in this room. And I'll second that motion. So it's been moved and seconded to continue this item to July the 27th, 9 a.m.
Hold on.
Didn't you say 3% in your motion?
Yeah.
Okay. So
in my motion, I said 3%.
Right. So should it just be continued to discuss?
Continue the item without a motion.
I agree with counsel. Is if you just continue it for consideration on July 27th at 9 a.m., and unless I hear differently from you, it's staff's intent right now to work with a cent per gallon approach, as has been done in multiple other jurisdictions.
Okay.
You want to amend your motion, Commissioner McGuffey?
Yes, I'll amend my motion. I'll make a motion to continue the ballot question 16.001. Shall the Story County Board of Commissioners enact an ordinance to impose for the period beginning January 1st, 2017 to December 31st, 2026, tax, a fuel index as proposed. We'll postpone this meeting or revisit this on July 27th at 9 a.m. in this courtroom.
All right, I'll second your motion. We move to second to continue this item to July the 27th, 9 a.m. in this room. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along now to under community development and planning, item number 19 for possible action, licensing board second readings.
Thank you, Commissioner. I would ask that for the agenda that you would approve items A through N, as they have met all requirements, and approve their licenses, their county licenses.
All right.
Okay. Is it A through N?
N, as in Nancy.
Nancy.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. O, N-N-O.
Okay.
No.
No, O. N-O. A through O.
All right. If I can get a motion to approve items A through O.
I'll make a motion to approve items A through O.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved in a second to approve items.
I have a comment, though. I would suggest to you the record should reflect that Commissioner Gilman had to leave, and I know that he had an important prospect client meeting scheduled with a large land user at 2 o'clock today out at the industrial park.
Okay, thank you. So it's been moved to second to go ahead and approve items A through O. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
And I would request the county commissioners continue P and Q, as we have given them temporary occupancy, but they're still not completely finished, but we'll continue theirs until they're completely finished with their buildings.
Okay. With that said, can I get a motion to continue items P and Q?
I'll make a motion to continue items P and Q.
Moved in second to go ahead and continue items P and Q. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving along now to item number 20, public comment. Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.